Chief Kush is going to come back and join us.
I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the Grover Beach City Council. This is Monday, October 16th, 2017. Would you all please stand and rise with us for a moment of silence for Joyce Anderson and also the victims from the Northern California fires. And Jeff, did you like to say something about Joyce?
Yes, it's with a sad and heavy heart that the community lost Joyce Anderson. Her husband and her, Dave Anderson, they were the owners of Central Coast Printing. But she was also someone who a lot of people in this community did theater with, and she was a heavy supporter of the Follies, of the Chameleon Productions, was an ardent supporter of the arts, actually worked in the Parks and Rec Division of the City of Grover Beach years ago as well. So she lost her battle with cancer on Saturday. So it's with that we have this moment of silence.
Thank you. Please remain standing for our Pledge of Allegiance tonight. Tonight we're going to have Park and Rec Manager Kathy Keckerty this evening.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Donna, when you're ready, roll call, please.
Councilmember Lee.
Here.
Councilmember Nichols.
Here.
Councilmember Peterson is absent. Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Here.
And Mayor Scholes.
Present. Thank you, Donna. City Attorney, will you cover our closed session announcements?
Council, on October the 7th, the council met in closed session related to a conference of real property negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8. Agency negotiator was City Manager Bronson related to Union Pacific Railroad in regards to the price and terms and conditions of payment regarding a lease or acquisition. And there was also a second item related to lease permit, license permit determination pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.7. And upon reconvening into open session, there was an announcement of no reportable action taken.
Thank you, City Attorney. At this point, we're going to review the agenda as presented. By staff. Do any members on the council want to change the order of the agenda?
No.
Make a motion that we proceed with the agenda as posted, unless you had a
change. Yeah, I'm thinking, why don't we move item 8 to after item 10? Because that is a city item. We can move the ones that have people here up a little earlier in the agenda. Everyone okay with moving 8 to after number 10?
Then I'll make a motion that we proceed with the agenda as amended.
I second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, we are going to move forward with the agenda with that one change. So let's move on to our ceremonial calendar. This is item number 1. This is a proclamation declaring the week of October 23rd through the 31st, 2017, as Red Ribbon Week. Councilmember Lee.
Yes. Thank you very much. This is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring the week of October 23rd through October 31st, 2017, as Red Ribbon Week. I'm pleased to read that whereas tobacco, alcohol, and other drug use and abuse represents a serious public health and safety threat in our city, our county, California, and throughout the United States. And whereas it is important for communities, schools, and individuals throughout San Luis Obispo County to work together to eliminate the demand for these substances and to promote programs that support commitment to a healthy, drug-free lifestyle. And whereas the Red Ribbon Celebration will be observed across the United States during Red Ribbon Week, October 23rd to the 31st, 2017. Whereas parents, youth, government, business, law enforcement, schools, religious institutions, service organizations, social services, health services, media, and the general public will demonstrate their commitment to drug-free communities by wearing and displaying red ribbons during this observance. Whereas Red Ribbon Week highlights local substance abuse prevention programs that involve youth and parents yearly through local community coalitions and numerous county countywide organizations, and also organizes or recognizes this year's theme, Your Future is Key, So Stay Drug-Free. Whereas the City of Grover Beach further commits resources to help the success of the Red Ribbon Celebration and year-round tobacco, alcohol, and other drug prevention efforts, and whereas Red Ribbon Week 2017 will be highlighted by all three elementary schools in Grover Beach. And it is resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach hereby supports October 23rd through the 31st, 2017, as Red Ribbon Week, and encourages all citizens to participate in tobacco, alcohol, and other drug prevention activities, making a visible commitment to healthy communities in which to raise a generation of drug-free youth.
Okay, very good. Do any other members have comments on this item before we go to Police Chief Peter? Okay. Chief?
Thank you, Honorable Mayor and members of the Council. Once again, the Grover Beach Police Department is going to be partnering with the Lucy Amar Unified School District and making presentations to our three local schools next week in honor of Red Ribbon Week. So as Councilmember Lee pointed out, the comment or the quote for this year is, "Your future is key, so stay drug-free." So, again, well, we appreciate your recognition of this very important week and our partnership with the schools. So, thank you.
Very good. You want to take a photo?
Shall we?
Shall we? Get him between us.
I was a little unbalanced there. So.
All right. Okay, we're going to move on to public communications. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council on any item within the jurisdiction of this council. Please bear in mind that we cannot take action on any item that is not on the agenda. So this is public communications for any item that is not on the agenda. Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Good evening, Elizabeth Dukas, North Grover Beach. I have just submitted an open session to the City of Grover Beach, another Public Records Act request to David P. Hill, City Attorney, the Grover Beach City Council, and all building officials, as the previous Public Records Act request revealed no documents and a specious, obtuse, and unintelligible response regarding building code violations that have been allowed to continue unabated for potentially decades with full knowledge of all involved individuals. Myself and other uninformed neighbors and occupants are still in harm's way as long as the original notice of violation are not perfected and the structure allowed to be in violation. In addition,
right here,
these are bags of aggregate and debris sloughing off of our recently slurry-sealed street on Parkview Avenue. In a meeting with my neighbors and Greg Ray, Public Works Director, and Matthew Bronson, City Manager, this is the result they expected, and all is perfectly okay and performing as expected. Wow. During the meeting, it was revealed that the bonding agent for the slurry seal was consciously left out of the formula as being unnecessary. Well, it was necessary, as is the standard in the industry and from research we have done. Our street is now in complete disrepair, rutty and falling apart, and we had one of the best paved streets in the city. I was initially paying $108 through my property taxes for the K-14 street bond, then $175, now $286, and we aren't even at half of the bond total. We are throwing away our money if this is where our money is going. And believe it or not, John Wysong was right. Gray Gray does not know how to build a street, let alone maintain them. And action needs to be taken now to stop this wanton disregard for construction below industry standards and well below the standard of care. In light of the recent Harvey Weinstein events unfolding in Hollywood, I find myself now compelled to speak up against the victimization of many, many Grover Beach citizens, including myself, and the wanton disregard of those not in the real estate and development community being personally denied my civil rights over those with money, power, and influence propelled and supported by this body called the Grover Beach City Council. I stand and speak up against those who haven't had a voice on the City Council, for those citizens whose dreams have been quashed, civil rights denied, and simply pushed aside to do political favors to retain voting blocks and to keep our political predator mayor, John Schulz, in office, who does have the power, position, authority, and oligarchic rule over all of us, making aiders and betters out of staff and employees. Mayor Schulz wields that power indiscriminately to keep and gain the voters he needs to stay in office. I do this at my own peril, as speaking up has had very harsh consequences for me for a long time. It is up to every single one of the City of Grover Beach staff, city representatives involved in the decision-making processes of the city, to not allow any victimization to continue over the many to benefit the few. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Is there anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close public communications. And we're going to move on with the rest of our agenda. We're going to move to our consent agenda, and these are typically routine items that we consider as a group. We have, looks like, five items under consent tonight. The first is a treasury report for the period of September 22nd to October 5th. One is the treasury report for the 2016 bond account. There's also the minutes of the city council meeting for June 19, 2017. We do have a report, or the 2016-17 bonds, street bonds report from our Citizens Oversight Committee. And then we also have a 2017-1 street rehabilitation and repair project, which is CIP 2295-7, award of professional design services. Do any members of the council want to pull any item from consent?
No. I don't want to pull anything. I just want to make a comment on item 5.
Okay.
I just want to draw people's attention to, because I know it's a consent item, that this is a report from our Citizens Oversight Committee on how the citizens' street bond money is being spent. These are three independent volunteer citizens who went through how the money for streets is being spent. And if you care to look at the report, it's not very long, but they find that the spending was correct and precise. And I just wanted to thank those citizens, because I know it was not easy filling that committee role. I do know one of them personally. I don't know all of them, but I know Terry Wingate, and he took this job very seriously. So I just wanted to thank them, because I know it was probably a lot of time and commitment. So that's all I want to say.
Well, thank you, and we echo that thank you for the people who serve on that committee and the finding that monies that have been spent in compliance with the law. So, Jeff, you have something?
And I do agree and echo the comments on item number 5. And then I had a question on, or a clarification on item number 6.
Okay.
Okay. And that is the street rehab and repair project award of professional design engineering services. And I just wanted to confirm with the city manager that the map and the table in the items are consistent in the fact that we are going to be moving forward with Second Street. So as part of the work, because the map doesn't include Second Street, but the table in the description in the staff report does include that. So I just want to make sure, for the community's sake, that we're clear that Second Street is part of that this design component.
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Lee. Second Street was included because Third Street is already completed, and that would leave Second Street as the only street remaining in that area. And in the interest of completeness, we wanted to make sure Second was included as well.
Okay, great. That's very good to hear.
Okay. Thank you for that. I had the same clarification, so thanks for asking that. The only other question I think I had asked at the last meeting is, are we at a point where we could not do, let's say, an alternate bid to pick up a couple other streets? So I see Mr. Ray in the back of the room, and I was just wondering if we then just need to come forward with a separate package to talk about Atlantic City from front to 8th, Ocean View from 4th to Charles, and then extending those streets down to Atlantic. So maybe you can just kind of give us an update on where we are in this process.
Honorable Counsel Greg Ray, Public Works Director, City Engineer. The action Council will be taking tonight is a consent item to approve a contract for design. The scope of work in that contract is laid out, so short of going back out for RFPs, I don't think we could just add on at this point. However, in the interest of smaller projects being able to move quickly, if Council desired to move forward on another small project in parallel design effort, I think we could go back out for RFPs relatively quickly, and it's something that Council could discuss or provide direction perhaps at a future meeting to staff.
Great. Thank you for that clarification. Okay, so we are on the consent agenda. I do not have any public request forms to speak, so is there anyone on the Council prepared to make a motion on the consent agenda?
I move the consent agenda be accepted as presented.
I'll second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, let's do a roll call.
Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw?
Yes.
Councilmember Lee?
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson is absent, and Mayor Shaw?
Yes. Motion carries. All right, we do not have any public hearings tonight, so that means we're going to move on to regular business. This is item number 7, and this is appointments to the Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission. Ms. Petker, were you turning to leave? Or?
Had my numbers mixed up.
All right.
Good evening. Mayor and City Council members, Kathy Petker, Parks Recreation Program Director. We currently have 2 vacancies on the Parks Recreation and Beautification Commission. The vacancies are due to the expiration of 2 positions that expired. The city advertised the vacancies on our social media, newspapers, local posting boards throughout the city, and cable channel 20. Last week, the advisory screening body committee, consisting of Mayor Scholes, Councilmember Nichols, and our chair, Commissioner Walt French, conducted interviews with 4 qualified candidates, and they recommended that the applicants that are for appointment this evening are here in the audience, Mr. Paul Press and Mr. Chris Long. Mr. Long has served on the Planning Commission in the past. And in addition to the Advisory Screening Body Committee's recommendations, they would like to recommend the City Council also appoint Mr. Jerry Pastor in the event that there's a vacancy on the Commission as well. And the applicants are here this evening, and if you have any questions of me, I'd be happy to answer. Otherwise, that concludes my report.
Okay, very good. Any council members have any questions or comments? Barbara, do you have anything?
My only comment is that we had a wonderful group of men to interview, and we had a wish that we could hire or bring on 3 of them. Instead of making choices.
Yeah, I would just like to thank everybody who took the time to apply and to take the time, because it's very important to everyone's quality of life here. So we appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, you have anything?
As someone who started my volunteerism with the city as part of the Parks and Rec and Beautification Commission, I definitely applaud and support the folks for coming forward. And you will have a great time, because it is the fun committee, as has been said in the past. And it brings so much light and bountiful joy to the city for all that you do.
Very good. Okay. I'll just echo what Barbara said. We had some excellent candidates, and it was not an easy decision, but we just were very encouraged to have residents who are willing to step up and volunteer their time, because these are all volunteer jobs, including the folks who are sitting up here on this dais. These are volunteer jobs, and when everyone steps forward and gets involved in the community, we can make a better community for everyone. And so I really appreciate you all coming forward. So with that, I don't have any speaker request slips from the public. So let's see if I can get someone up here to make a motion in accordance with the staff recommendation.
Don't be shy.
I'll be happy to make a motion to accept the Screening Commission's recommendations and to recommend approval of the adoption of the resolution authorizing the appointments of Chris Long and Paul Press to serve the remainder of the four-year term of office expiring on March 31st, 2021 to the Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission. And three, in the event of an unscheduled vacancy, appoint Jerry Pastor to serve the remainder of the vacant commission term without requiring Mr. Pastor to go through another interview process.
Very good motion.
I'll second.
Okay, there's a motion and there's a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call, please.
Councilmember Lee.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson is absent. And Mayor Scholes.
Yes. Motion carries. And with that, would certainly like to introduce the new commissioners or have them come up and introduce themselves to the community and say a few words if you would like.
Good evening. Hello again to the public. My name is Paul Press. It's a privilege. Thank you very much for the opportunity to serve. My wife and I have been part of the community for 4 years, and prior to moving to this wonderful place, Grover Beach, I had the great experience to serve as a board of directors for the Rec and Park District in the city of Tehachapi, and have extensive background in Rec and Park, as well as serving 26 years in public education, the last 12, 13, somewhere in there, as an administrator. So, working with that. And again, thank you very much.
You're welcome, and thank you.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Chris Long. Thank you for the appointment. Thank you to the screening committee. I've heard rumor that the TV show Parks and Rec was loosely based off the city of Grover Beach Parks and Rec Department. So I know this is going to be fun, but in all seriousness, thank you very much for the opportunity and look forward to digging in.
Thank you, Chris. We appreciate you. All right. So, Kathy, when is their orientation and training? No, I'm kidding.
Well, actually, they don't know this yet, but they'll be getting called soon and getting their binders, and our first meeting is this Thursday night.
So. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh,
good. Get to work.
Well, that explains the rush. Yeah. All right. Again, thank you, gentlemen. We really appreciate it. Okay, so now we are going to move to item number 9. As you all recall, we moved item 8. So this is the request for city maintenance of Marbrisa Subdivision Lift Station and Stormwater Basin. Public Works Director Ray, you have the floor.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor.
Hang on a sec.
Excuse me, please. Since I live in that homeowners association, I will recuse myself.
Okay, very good. Let's give her some time to clear the room.
You are. Thank you, Honorable Mayor, and the remainder of Council. So I'll keep it brief tonight. Essentially, what you have before you is the request from Marbrisa Subdivision for the city to assume maintenance of a private subdivision lift station and private subdivision stormwater basin. Some very quick background. As Council knows, Marbrisa is a gated subdivision located in the north part of the city. Conditions of approval for that project required an HOA to assume maintenance of a handful of improvements within the subdivision, including those that are the subject matter of the request this evening. On August of 2017, the city received a letter from representatives of the HOA requesting the city council an item be agendized before the council to discuss potentially taking over maintenance of those two items. So staff at this point is essentially seeking council's direction prior to spending time evaluating and assessing that request, council's direction on whether or not we should in fact spend staff resources doing just that. A couple of fine notes. Attachment, I believe it's number two, your staff report is a list of information that staff is seeking in the evaluation of this request, and ultimately, with council's direction, we would seek to have answers to those questions as well as any other bits of information council thought was important for the decision-making process. Fiscal impact, I mean, it's assumed that maintenance of the lift station would have an impact on the city's sewer enterprise fund, potentially have rate impacts. And so the alternatives council could consider this evening would be to receive information regarding the request to assume maintenance of the Marbrisa lift station and retention basin, directs staff to further assess the request and bring information back to council. Another alternative would be to receive information on the same subject and direct staff not to expend resources in further assessing the request, or finally just to provide alternate direction to staff. And so with that, I will close and turn it back to the council.
Okay, very good. Let's see if there's any questions of staff. Miriam, do you have any questions?
I do have a lot of questions, but I don't know that Mr. Ray would really, you know, be able to answer them, because I think what's before us now is just whether we delve into this further. So I don't think I'm going to try to bog us down right now, because we have to deal with the issue at hand first. So
fair enough. Jeff?
I do have just a couple questions which may help help me kind of determine that discussion, and it may not be for Mr. Ray. It may end up being for the representative. But the question I have is, in the staff report, there is a reference to 2007, and on the dais, we were provided this evening the minutes of the 2007 discussion, at which point the city denied the request to take over maintenance of this. So I guess my question becomes is, what's the difference in this request versus that request? So as to why we would be reconsidering this from a citywide basis.
And Mayor, with your permission?
Yes.
Okay. So the 2000 request was specifically related to the retention basin and did not include the subdivision lift station.
Okay, my
But similar in regard to certainly the retention basin.
Okay, great. Thank you for that clarification. I misunderstood that when I was reading that. So the second question I have is, it appears that this request at this juncture is for just the lift station. So this would not include the collection system. Is that correct?
So that's one of the questions you'll find in attachment two, and that is yet to be determined, as well as just exactly how that might happen. There may be some private property issues related to the collection system for both stormwater and wastewater. So,
okay, great. That's all I had for now.
Okay. And though I did have a few questions, but I you're right, Miriam, with respect was before. So, I would ask staff to clarify. I know you didn't go through into the staff report. We actually have a staff report, a lot of people haven't read. So there is a reference to the residents who live in the subdivision having paying for this lift station and still paying the same amount with respect to rates for sewer and wastewater. Can you just clarify or expand on that a little bit?
That is correct. City's wastewater fees, for the user fees, I should say, are paid through a rate structure that essentially assesses the entire city for all of the city-owned collection system, lift stations, and ultimately for the treatment at the South Sand District. Yes, these homeowners do pay the same as everyone else. And that is reflective of the amount of publicly owned improvements that exist. Should this be added to those public improvements, it's likely that, in fact, everyone would pay slightly more.
Okay. And is this the only lift station in the city of River Beach that is privately maintained?
It is not. There's one other.
Okay. What's the other one?
Currently, there's one in the state parks that essentially serves the state parks concessionaires. And actually, there's another being built, or essentially going to be built, that will be at the Holiday Inn. So.
Okay. Then those are commercial. Okay. And do we know what was the basis of this being a condition of that subdivision? As someone who, in a prior life, represented individuals and landowners, I was just kind of curious as to. Do we know the background? Do we know the reason why it was made a condition of this subdivision?
You know, in particular, I searched through the council minutes in trying to determine specifically what the rationale was. And I, very much by inference from some of the conversations that were had at the time, it appeared that the city thought it was in the best interest of the city not to take on these additional costs.
Okay.
I would reflect to another project. The city, as an example, constructed the South Industrial District sewer main at considerable expense to eliminate three lift stations from city maintenance. They're known to be somewhat costly to maintain. So I think it was a decision that was made at the time, and the conditions were made on the developer, and the developer chose to accept those conditions.
Okay, great. And then you have a follow-up?
I was going to say, I generated one more question. I apologize. Is there any non-private use of the lift station? Is there any parcels outside of Marbrissa that are using this lift station?
I would have to defer to the HOA representatives for that. I believe the answer is no, but I would have to defer to them.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Those are all of our questions for now. Let me open this up to the public, and I will start with the Marbrissa representative.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. My name is Carol Florence. I'm a principal planner with Oasis Associates, located in San Luis Obispo, here representing the Marbrissa Homeowners Association. I do want to make one comment about City Manager and Public Works Director, City Engineer, just to let you know that their expenditure of time to date has been extremely efficient. We had one conference call where we discussed the details of our request, what they thought may be asked of us if we move forward through the process. So I just want to let you know that time expenditure has been small but very efficient and productive. But with that said, I would ask that the council adopt the alternative to receive the information about the Marbrissa request, including the lift station and the retention basin, and direct staff to further assess the request to allow us to bring information back to you. I do realize the weightiness of any decision, especially based on your fiduciary duty in your positions, and if you've read the 9 points of additional information request, we feel very comfortable responding to that information, bringing that information back to you, working with staff so that when we do return, that this is fully vetted. We've overturned every rock and stone and pipeline, et cetera, to bring this information back to you to make a well-informed decision. So hopefully you will move forward to allow staff to work with us. I commit to being efficient with their time. And bringing them all of the information that they need on your behalf as well. So with that said, I'm here this evening with Mr. Bill Nichols, who's the president of the Owners Association, if you have any questions of us. But I think I may agree with the mayor and councilwoman that as much as I'd like to answer all of these questions for you tonight, I won't be able to do that, but I look forward to having that opportunity.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Florence. Any questions?
I guess Jeff's question was in my mind as well. So back in 2007, we were talking retention basin. Now we're talking lift station and retention basin, or?
Yes, that's
okay,
correct.
Both, okay. And then is this something that you've already talked to your members about that they support? Because, for example, if my home were overlooking this retention basin, now if that is handed over to the city, suddenly I'm going to have a lot less control if we do things a different way. It sounds like you're keeping up on it yearly. What if we keep up on it only every 5 years? How are your residents feeling about that, or have you asked them?
I think that's a legitimate question. I think that the members of the association have been well informed. Since it's a small association, they know pretty much on a daily basis the operations of what is under their purview. But I am more than happy to bring that back to them so that they're fully aware that the level of maintenance may or may not be as it is today.
And the level of their individual
expectations,
input,
I think, yes,
will
I think
change.
Certainly.
Okay. Is there a reason you're pursuing it now? Is your HOA having a funding issue, or what was the reason to bring it back?
I think because perhaps economics are such that in 2007, 8, 9, during the Great Recession, that was a difficult ask of the council.
Okay.
And again, I think there's more to this negotiation than just we'd like you to do this. I think that we're going to be able to bring things to the table that may make your decision a little easier.
Okay. But as of now, it's in good shape. It's
yes.
Not that it needs a complete overhaul.
Absolutely not.
Okay. And then something that if we do decide, you know, to look at this more, I'll need to understand and know is, you know, as taking this over with this, as a city, we have different requirements for who we hire. We'll have to pay prevailing wage. So even though for you guys it may be $13,000, $14,000 a year, for us it may be a very different figure. So we have to know. That would be something I would definitely need to know, along with just, you know, the legal grounds or the precedent for us taking this over. But I think for now that would be my questions.
Thank you for your comments.
Okay, Joe.
And excuse me, my question kind of piggybacks off of what Miriam was asking. My question centers around urgency. Obviously, there's other or there's resources that the city is committed to other projects. So, is there an urgency if we were to move forward, or what kind of time frame would you be looking for either a response or a decision from the council?
Well, I think that we would be able to respond to the 9 items that we're responsible for in a fairly quick fashion. I want to be respectful of staff's time because I know that you have many things to deal with as a city and all of the other business items. So I would just say that we would acquiesce once we've completed our part of the information gathering and let staff determine how quickly we can move through the process. But I would be remiss to say that we wouldn't like to do this quickly.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see. I have one speaker request form, and that's from Liz Dukas.
Good evening again. When this matter of every citizen paying for the operation of the Marbrisa Private Development's lift station was proposed in 2007, it was denied, as rightfully it should have been, and now it is before us again. And I was at that meeting in 2007, and definitely the lift station was discussed because they talked about the cost of the power associated to run the pumps. And I think that was one of the biggest problems, is just the cost of the power. But I remember that conversation and that discussion vividly. We have been bonded, taxed, rates increased across the board, and penalized enough. Your citizens do not have a large pool of money to pull from every time something like this comes out comes up. We are out of money and do not want to have another increase in anything, including water and sewer rates, because they can't manage their own private development. And I speak for many citizens who cannot be here when I say this. What needs to be further disclosed to the public is how this got agendized, what conversations with our mayor has gone on and with our current Marbrisa residents, Councilwoman Barbara Nichols and former Councilman Bill Nichols. What are the Marbrisas Association dues? If they are not $300 per month, like the HOA on North 12th Street, then the answer would be no, we are not going to pay. Your gates, the Marbrisa gates, are locked to the public, and our pocketbooks are locked as the city keeps writing checks it can't cash and taking on debt it will never be able to pay, especially considering our $20 million of underfunded pension liability. We have paid hundreds of thousands of dollars, much to former Mayor Scholl's former employer, RRM Design Group, for the development, redevelopment, design, redesign, configuration and reconfiguration of the beachfront lodge, when it has in fact way surpassed violations of California contract law, as the original bid contract has changed more than 10% and should go back to bid. Also, Mayor Scholl's violated the bid contract by having each and every citizen of this community bear the burden of taking on all the infrastructure cost requirements that all bidders knew they were to pay for when bidding for this lodge. And now, because of some deal with Pacifica Companies and our mayor, we are going to be mortgaging city properties, and to do so with the addition of $9 million of debt, thus erasing any appreciable profits from this lodge over the next 10 years. It is now also proposed that you want each and every citizen to pay for the Grover Beach City Council members' private health care costs. Once again, wow, our city council are supposed to be public servants, not public dependents. This is truly a pay-to-play environment, as innocent citizens purchasing homes in Grover Beach are not aware existed, but is clear to see in the bright light of day. Mayor Scholl's claims to be very concerned over safety in having the Ramona Garden Park tree cut down, yet his own citizens have died and continue to be in danger in poorly lit and unmarked street intersections, yet his cronies in the building and development field have been paid handsomely for the consultant work over his long tenure in office. We cannot be paid anymore.
Is anyone else? And we're talking about the Marbrisa. This is not public comment. This is a specific item.
Yeah, I saw 6 o'clock, you
know. Well, John, are you going to comment on Marbrisa? Okay.
You know, when you get 84, I'd like to see what you're...
I hope I get to be 84.
You know, after being here 60 years, there in the other room was the council, and they said when... these places that have this problem of sewer, they're supposed to take care of themselves, not us taxpayers. It's just like the streets. Stupid people want us taxpayers to do it. Has anybody ever said anything about a mop bucket and streets? Well, look at Granddaddy. But anyway, if you people, and you've been here 10 years plus, and there's others, had a turn that septic tank around, 200, 300 gallons going into the ocean. Now, I got cattle, and I just heard from a guy the other day, they're going to shut the water off. There's two big ponds up there, Tahoe and Orville. Boy, I tell you, I'm loaded, but I can't talk because I was headed for Wichita, Kansas, and my son turned me around and took me to Cottage Hospital. Well, I'm still talking, I'm still walking. But I'll tell you, this town could get a blue ribbon, grand champion, on incompetent, irresponsible, and dysfunctional. I never in my life, I had a one year, well, run room school, back in the days when we got pennies, quarters, and dimes. And I worked on a unloaded lumber, 25 cents an hour. I went to Korea. I didn't get any money over there either. I come back and went to work for Safeway for $1 an hour. You people don't understand how to take care of business. I've been in the cattle business 50 years here. We've had 10 years of drought, and 20% of us are still in business. That means this old man, 84 years old. But I don't think any taxpayer, I don't understand it because I've been out of order here for a while, but I don't think you should make us taxpayers pay for anything that they should pay for. Now, you explain it to me.
Is there anyone else? Did anyone come forward? Let me close this to the public and bring it back to the council. And city attorney, since there are only three members up here, as Councilmember Nichols recused herself because he does live in Marbarisa, and we're not sure about the other council member, but does any action require three votes, or is it a majority of those that have to
say? It's a majority vote of the quorum. You have a quorum, okay. So you can pass as a matter of business a majority vote, which would be two of you.
Okay. Thank you.
So a question of staff. So our city manager. So in working with the representatives, how much effort or how much time would you anticipate would be necessary to address or receive the comments of the responses to the nine comments and then make a recommendation back towards the council?
Well, I don't have an exact number of hours that it would take for this. I think the issues that we identified are ones that are certainly able to be addressed by the HOA, and we would work with them diligently to get responses, to analyze them. We would, I'm sure, do a site visit inspection, be able to look at the area as well. It's work that certainly we'd be able to do as part of our normal process of analysis and review and bring back a recommendation to the council. So all the work can be done, I think, done fairly efficiently. It's just a matter of the time frame and balancing that with the other projects and other work that we're doing in public works, which, as you know, is quite extensive right now. Mm-hmm. I would say that looking back at the 2007 item, there was a 90-day window between when it first came up to the council in August and when it came back to the council in November. That could be a benchmark that we could use in looking at bringing this back to the council at the first meeting in January after the holidays to give us time to go through the information and give it the thoughtful analysis that we'd like to present to the council to help in your decision-making process and be able to move forward at that point. So that's one approach from a time frame standpoint. Again, all of this is doable. It's a matter of balancing that with other workload that we're pursuing as well, and making sure we don't limit or shortchange that work we're doing as well.
Okay.
So, you have more? Yeah, towards that same question. So now, and it's going to end up going in down an interesting path with my question here, is if we did proceed with requesting the nine responses, could we add a tenth or additional ones? I'm assuming that we can. Along the lines of number 10 would be, what would the benefit to the city be for assuming maintenance and responsibility for these items in association with the cost incurred?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, should we get to the point where someone wants to make a motion to move forward and study this, then I would say then that could be a suggestion to modify the information that staff is looking for. I see the city attorney leaning forward. You have something?
The answer to your question is yes. You can impose or ask for any additional information that the council needs or deems necessary to make a future decision.
That's what I said. Anything else? No. Anything else? Wayne, we're done. We're having some deliberation. We're deliberating on what decision to make with respect to even staff directions.
My input would really be relevant to the decision that you make.
And Mr. Mayor, I appreciate the back and forth, but you've closed public comment, and so
I'm aware you were closing it on this. I was thinking you were closing it on what the 84-year-old gentleman stood up and discussed.
No, it's on this item.
Well, then I was not aware that you were closing it on this item.
Wayne, what do you have to say? Come on up.
What I actually have to Yes.
Wait till you get to, can you just give us your name for the record?
Hello, my name is Anthony Wayne Embry. I live at 1624 Trueville Avenue, Grover Beach. And my concern is you're wanting to take on another storage water system and another pumping station. And you already have three storage water sites that you don't maintain now. So why would you want to take on another one? That's my question to you. You have one at the Mentone Drainage Basin that you have ignored for 5 years and not maintained. You have a pumping station right up here on the hill, up here on 16th Street, that is on manual, and you have deferred maintenance on it, but it's inoperable. You have another water collection system over here at 16th Street Park over here that you have deferred maintenance on that cost $1 million, and it's inoperable, okay? You have another park at Farrell and at Oak Park that you have ignored maintenance on for at least 2 to 3 years, and now you want to take on another one. I am really concerned with the city taking on another storage and pump station. That is my concerns. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Since I've opened this back up to the public, is there anyone else that would like to address the item before the council? Just to be fair. Okay, let me close it, bring it back. That's it. Last comments in public. So, Miriam?
Okay. Well, I think it's no secret that Barbara lives in Marbrisa, just so everyone, and I sit next to Barbara, so. But I also don't believe in, just because I know someone, that maybe they shouldn't have their fair say in presenting information. I will say that from what I've heard today, I'm not convinced, because the only reason I heard for approaching this again was, well, the recession's over and maybe you have money now. That I would need to see legal precedent. I would need to see a real reason for us to be doing this besides that. But I think every citizen should have the right to present information before a decision is made. So I would be in favor of us getting more information. That being said, you know, we made a very strict list of 2017 goals, because I think, at least I know, I wanted to do everything when I first got here, and it left the city manager, poor Bob Peralt's, head spinning, and we made it a goal to stop doing that so that we can get things done. So this would have to come at, you know, the timing of our staff and what they think that they can realistically do. And it may not be 90 days. They may have to come back and say we can't do it, and that has to be okay. But I'm always, if someone gives me something, I'm going to read it, and I would like to make an informed decision on this. So I would be in favor of getting more information if staff can fit it in.
Okay. Boy, when I left home, I guess I should never think a meeting's going to go a certain way. I've been doing this a long time. Anyway, for those who have watched me on this council for I don't know how many years, I've always tried to be fair, and I've always done every decision based on that. So let's be clear. There are 49 homes, and I don't know how many people who live in this residential neighborhood. It's not just the person who sits to your right. These are folks who pay taxes in this community, and they pay water rates in addition to taking on a lift station that no one else does. Now, we're not making a final decision tonight. What staff is asking us for is direction to look into this and to come back so we can make an informed decision. And I would say, on a scale of being fair to everyone, and Mr. Embry, you brought up some really good points, and those will be considered when a final decision is made, depending on the direction the council chooses to give. But this is about fairness. This is about, and I can tell you, I've been on this council long enough that there was folks who lived near the basin on Farrell and Oak Park. It was a small group of citizens paying for maintenance of one basin that was used by the community, and that was a previous city council, and it was a similar issue. What's fair, but we can't get to a decision tonight because we need to have all the information, and that's all information presented here tonight. So, yes, we adopted goals. But all of our goals and anything in this community are what we call dynamic. And when a community comes, whether it's one person or whether it's a neighbor, it comes and asks this council to consider something, I think we would be remiss if we didn't say, let's get more information so we can make an informed decision. So with that, let's see where this council, what direction this council wants to give staff.
So I'm going to concur with both of you and say that getting more information is key to being able to make a decision. But I would be looking for additional questions to be added to the list. So,
and I think the one you brought up earlier about public benefit is it should be the first question asked.
Gotcha. Then from that perspective, I'll let's see. Do we need to make a motion on this, City Attorney?
You can do it by consensus if you desire. It's okay. Direction of staff.
Gotcha. So then in the interest of consensus, I would add at least two questions subject to additional discussion, one of which is what would be the benefit to the city for taking over the sewer lift station as well as the maintenance, the stormwater basin. And then the second question would end up being probably an ancillary of number six, I think, which is what is the current capacity of the basin relative to 100-year storm runoff from the tract and water entering the tract from off-site? Maybe an A and a B towards that is I know the city has done stormwater projects in other parts of the city that have made the need for storm basins either an opportunity to reduce the capacity or the potential to eliminate some basin or to so if it could be shown that we could either reduce the size of the basin or eliminate it completely, is the opportunity there for the city to be deeded the property if it doesn't already belong to the city? And if so, would that then provide us with an opportunity to sell the property, depending upon what could be done with it under a land use situation?
So those are things that you'd look for?
Look for.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that why don't you just make the motion with all of that?
Okay. So I'll make a motion that we request additional information of the Marbrisa Homeowners Association, agendized for a future off-calendar meeting, depending upon the information coming back. And in addition to the nine questions requested, a tenth would be what is the benefit to the city for overtaking or taking over these facilities. And then 11 would be, see if I can shorten that comment, of capacity of the stormwater basin verification and what potential landowner / sale / development rights could the city obtain from that parcel.
Okay.
I'll second the motion. Is there something... there's a couple of things I'd like to know too. Should I don't know.
Is put it out there. I'm sure staff. I'm sure this is just a base.
Yeah.
This is just a start because they're.
Yeah.
Gonna be
direction for staff, so you can
add okay. I would also want to know, specifically cost, because I know now it was said to be $13,000 or $14,000 a year, but if it has to be done by the city, it may be more because of some of the restrictions we have, such as prevailing wage. So I'd want to know the hard cost. I'd want to know kind of precedent for doing this. Is this something that is commonly done or has been done? Let's see. I guess that's all I can think of for now, but just kind of reiterating that as was raised by the public, this may be maintained in a very different way than it is now. So people need to be aware and okay with that. But I think that's all I would need to know to consider it. And I guess also just really laying out what has changed since 2007. If it's something more than just the recession's over, I'd like to know that.
Okay. There's a motion. Was there a second? Was there a second?
Yeah, I second.
Okay. There's no additional discussion. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. Let's take a 10-minute break. Reconvene the Grover Beach City Council meeting. This is Monday, October 16, 2017. We had just concluded item number 7, and we are moving item 8 down to after item 10. I'm sorry, we just concluded item number 9, my fault. So we are going to move into item number 10, which is the Ramona Square parking lot improvements. Mr. Ray, you have the floor.
Thank you again, Honorable Mayor and City Council. As you well know, the Ramona Square parking lot is bounded by 9th Street, 10th Street, West Grand Avenue, and Ramona Avenue. The parking lot is surrounded by commercial uses. It contains 68 parking spaces. 77% of the property is privately owned. 23% is owned by the city. And there are 12 private parcels that make up that private ownership. This project, the parking lot construction itself and maintenance, were originally funded by two assessment districts that are now defunct. Council has identified that this parking lot has a public benefit for special event and bus stop use. The map, or the aerial photo behind me, shows generally the entire parking lot. You can see on the north half of the lot is what was originally District 2. The center portion of the lot, it's hatched in blue there. That is the city-owned parcel, which contains some of the parking. And then District 1 is that area of the parking lot that is has businesses oriented to Grand Avenue. Council is well aware, as are the property owners, that the condition of the lot has deteriorated. And in order to correct that, the repairs could be as extensive as repaving, constructing new concrete curbs and walkways, replacing the landscaping, making ADA upgrades for accessibility, and replacing damaged or inoperative lighting and irrigation. And some photos here that show the conditions. You can see potholes, landscaping that no longer has irrigation, trees. The trees have expanded to the size that they're basically damaging the lot and the concrete around the planters. You can see the cracks and the damaged paving as you enter the lot from 9th Street here. You know, just more of the same. Landscaping features are damaged, lots of potholes, and the pavement's fully deteriorated. In June of 17, Council directed staff to budget for the improvements and also to seek reimbursement from the property owners for the private share of the project. The intent was to use the unallocated fund of the local transportation fund itself. Prior to that, the city had hired a consultant to develop a preliminary cost estimate, and that cost estimate was further refined by the city to include ADA and soft costs, as well as the landscape and other items that weren't originally considered by that consultant. Here you have the output of that cost estimate, and this is for the full repair, including the ADA upgrades. This repair would provide a 40-year lifespan to the improvements, which they would still require maintenance. And without going into total detail here, the estimated project cost is $722,000. The city's share, the 23% of ownership, would result in $166,000 of cost to the city, and the private share, resulting from the private ownership of 77%, would result in an assessment of roughly $556,000 or reimbursement in that amount from the property owners. Another option, an alternate, was identified by staff, and that includes a pavement maintenance only. Council may be aware that in order to not have to install the ADA improvements, which are rather extensive on site, we would be limited to a maintenance of the asphalt, and that would be a project that would have roughly a three-year lifespan, and that's primarily related to the condition of the existing asphalt. It's really beyond maintenance, but a maintenance treatment could be applied to it. That cost was estimated at $161,000, with the 23% share coming to just over $37,000, and the 77% private share coming to $124,000. This chart here shows the difference in the two projects. The primary project, $722,000, includes the full ADA upgrades and walkways, landscape irrigation and trees, electrical and sewer repairs, new base being brought in under the parking lot, and a full repavement. The pavement maintenance only project would just include the pavement. None of those other improvements are included. Staff conducted a meeting on October 11th with property owners. Mayor Scholl also attended that meeting. Roughly half of the property owners were in attendance, and they represented approximately 54% of the private property within the lot. There was a general concurrence of the meeting that the approach we were taking, the cost-sharing concept, was appropriate. And we did, however, receive questions about the impacts of construction itself and what options we would have to mitigate those impacts. Tonight, staff is seeking council direction on whether or not to proceed with design. And if council were to provide that direction, staff has developed the preliminary schedule you see here. And that would be that staff would anticipate awarding the design in fall of 2017, completing the design in winter of 2018, bidding and awarding this in spring of 2018, and starting work in late spring of 2018. Under fiscal impact, there is sufficient balance in the local transportation fund to fund these repairs. Staff is prepared to put together a draft reimbursement agreement for the property owner and council's consideration. The cost to the property owners in the city would be based on square footage, the 23 to 77 mentioned earlier. And the idea would be that there would be a multi-year payback period with approximately 2% interest. So tonight, staff is recommending that council provide direction for staff to proceed with the design. And that concludes my report. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for that staff report. Let's see if there's any questions. Barbara, do you have any questions?
Not really.
Okay.
Pretty clear.
Mary?
I have a question as to how it will work, because you have two cost estimates that are very different. One for, I think, $160,000 and one for $700,000+. One being a 40-year fix and one being a 3-year fix. Okay, $722,000. So how can we move forward with design when we're not sure which one to do? And if people are going to sign on for a cost-sharing agreement, shouldn't they know how much they're going to be sharing in? Because that's a huge difference. So just how is this going to work so it's fair and the people who are actually sharing the costs get to weigh in on what the cost should be?
Mayor Scholl, with your permission?
Yes, you have the floor.
Thank you. So the only project that has been presented to the property owners so far is the full repair option. That is the estimated $722,000 project. And so the input we've received thus far has been related to that project. This is an option for council to consider this evening, however, in that if council perceives that to be too large of a project to undertake, or has received feedback from the property owners that is simply too much cost to reimburse, that council could choose the pavement maintenance only option and direct staff to proceed with design of that. So we're actually seeking council direction on not just proceeding with design, but which project, in fact, does council desire.
Okay, but we're only 23% owners in this. I mean, we are fronting the money to make the repair, but we're going to get reimbursed except for 23%, right? So, you know, me as a council member, without knowing what the 77% owners think, I don't know if I feel right in making that determination. I'm just not sure about how that works, but legally or just fairness wise. Well, maybe I'm missing something.
Let me try something here. So staff is, as you see, we have a cost estimate. It's based on really no design, just a sketch and some couple of walkthroughs of the parking lot and current construction costs. The design effort, presuming we would design the full replacement, full repair option, would identify in great detail all of the construction items on the site, and then we would have an engineer's cost estimate coming out of that design effort. So that would be a second option, or second opportunity to have an idea of what the cost would be. That cost during the process would be shared with property owners. As I mentioned earlier, we've had several outreach to the property owners walking in through this process. And as I understand it, we've had some favorable feedback on their willingness to reimburse the city for some or all of the 77% share. So,
okay.
Yeah. I think you're right.
So the 54% of people who you have spoken to are in favor of moving forward. I would just hate for us to go and expend money on design and then to hear from the people who are supposed to be cost sharing, I didn't want this and I'm not going to share because I haven't signed anything yet. So I'm just, that's the part I'm getting a little hung up on, the order of things and just making sure, because it's just always been, what I'm trying to say is from the start, I've just always said the city owns 23%, we should pay 23%, but I want to make sure, however we do it, that that's how it ends up being. So, I'll let other people ask questions. Thank you.
Jeff?
Thank you. First question is, when you say that we have adequate funds to do the project out of local transportation funds, that is the larger project, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And so now if you could bring up the map, if you don't mind. So, and I'll kind of reference a number in your, the design component was approximately $55,000, I think it was, and that would be for the design of the parking lot and ADA improvements in both District 1 and District 2, which District 1 obviously includes the city parcel, is that correct?
Yeah, District 1 and the city parcel were created first, and District 2 was what followed shortly thereafter, but the answer is yes.
Okay, so now if we went forward with the entire project, you referenced that there would be ADA improvements. Is that to each of the buildings would have ADA access, or could we have accessible parking on the street and then have access to the buildings from the public rights of way that we wouldn't need to do the ADA, or has that been developed?
So a lot of these questions came up the other night at the public meeting on this, and so it turns out that there's a number of businesses within this parking lot that front only on the parking lot. There are a few businesses that front only on the surrounding streets, and then some have access to both, through the building, presumably. If we did the full reconstruction of the parking lot, we would be required to construct ADA parking spaces. The number of those spaces is governed by the Americans with Disabilities Act and the state building code. That would include all of the accesses to every door that fronts on the parking lot. And so the problem now is that many of those walkways are 5 to 6% cross slope. The ramps leading up to those walkways exceed allowable slope. So there's actually considerable amount of ADA work that would need to be done.
And we would be passing whatever threshold is necessary to bring those up to current code So there's no hardship approach that could be developed because of the size of the project?
Given that it's a public parking lot and being funded by public funds, no.
Okay. So going back to Miriam's question with regards to effectively the assessment districts, does the estimate kind of bring the assessment district forward first, or is the request to basically proceed with this in advance of the formation of the assessment district?
The concept being presented to council is that at this time an assessment district would not be formed. The project would move forward on the agreement from the property owners to fund some or all of the 77% via the reimbursement and via individual reimbursement agreements that would be recorded against each property. A district could be formed in the future. Ongoing maintenance is one of the issues that would need to be addressed. Perhaps that could be addressed by agreement also. However, there are some outstanding items. Ongoing maintenance, future replacement costs could ultimately be addressed by a district being formed at some later date.
Okay. Was there, last question, was there a discussion or a review or consideration of a phased approach? Let's say that the improvements on the city parcel and District 1 shown there being the being a first phase of improvements with design and then subsequent construction of Phase 2, which would be District 2. Was there a cost estimate developed for that, or was that discussed at the meetings or with the property owners?
That idea has not been discussed.
Okay. That's what I had for now.
Okay. So the only question I actually have at this time, and because I know Mr. Ford is here and he can speak to this better than the rest of us. Craig, you've shown two scenarios. One, which is obviously a full redo, which kicks in ADA requirements, which gets us close to over $700,000. And then one that's less than 200 for just basic maintenance. Is the basic maintenance a slurry seal, or would we be able to go down? Is there another alternative in between the two?
The basic maintenance, as far as we can go without triggering the ADA, would be to do some localized dig out and repairs, which areas that have completely failed and there's not suitable base material, or the base material is wet, saturated, or something, to where it just won't support loads. And we could do localized dig outs and repairs, and then we could do a thin overlay on the remainder of the parking lot. So it wouldn't be a slurry seal, but its life expectancy would be highly dependent on the quality of the asphalt that's underneath.
Okay.
Can I ask one more question based on one of Jeff's answers?
Sure.
You mentioned something that because it's a public parking lot and the city's involved, a lot of this ADA is triggered. Now, I know everyone felt that by us contributing our 23%, that would save business owners money, but is it actually costing them money with us being involved because it raises the cost so high? If we were totally uninvolved, would this be much less expensive?
There would be lower costs related to prevailing wage. Private property owners would not have to pay prevailing wage. And even with our project, there could be some value engineering done. Leave out landscape or leave out, don't irrigate it, things like that. It could be done. It would be a much simpler project. But certainly, I think the private property owners could proceed with less rigorous design, so there might be some savings in design. And ultimately, if the property owners pursued this individually or in small groups of property owners, the cost to them individually is likely to fall under the provision which Councilmember Lee alluded to in that hardship. You have to expend a certain percentage of value in order to trigger ADA improvements, and I think they could individually fall under those requirements. But we wouldn't have that opportunity if the city conducts the work.
Okay. Thank you.
I have one question.
Okay, Barbara.
What happens if a property owner absolutely refuses to participate?
I think that's a question back to council. If a property owner refuses to participate, who would pay that portion of it? Would it be the other property owners, or would the city assume that share? Would there be some kind of hardship provisions? And there are some details that need to be worked out, presuming that council directs us to move ahead.
And that's the difference between a reimbursement agreement approach and an assessment district. A reimbursement agreement is a document that's ultimately signed by both parties, and the city's goal may be to get as much reimbursement as possible. An assessment district, basically, once it's formed and once it's established and voted on, it assesses on the property going forward. So the district takes more time to set up. It takes more upfront time and effort. It just also produces a more consistent vehicle if you don't get all the reimbursements agreed upon upfront.
Okay, thank
you. Okay, so I have a lot more questions and comments because I really believe we need to add some context around this. But what I want to do is open this up to the public and let Mr. Ford come in, because I think he can give us a good background on the history and how we've gotten here. So let me open this up to the public. Brad, you want to come forward?
Good evening. I'm Brad Ford. First of all, I like to say you guys are doing an amazing job. Matt's just gone way above and beyond. I didn't think it would get handled with so much involvement on your part. But I think the concept of, to answer your question in terms of trying to do it privately, be very, very difficult to get everybody on board. You need some way of somebody pulling it together and making sure that this does get covered. As far as dealing with it in perpetuity, if we do it in the private sector, there's always going to be somebody that has to come up and be involved with all the maintenance, and it just doesn't make any sense. I think that's why the district was formed in the first place, to kind of get that handled. As far as the extent of which program we should do, I think we really should do the whole thing. I think it's going to make such a difference for the city. It's the core of the city, and it could just be a catalyst to really develop that. If you want to see the properties on Grand, which I do have there developed, we really need to get the parking in the back. I mean, I've broached it, but it just didn't make sense with nothing done in the back. So this will give some continuity to it, and it's a great idea. As far as my feelings with the costs, I found some costs in there that just look way out of line, and I think maybe there's an option, maybe going to getting another estimate on the cost. But as far as your concern is what the property owners what they're going to pay, we really don't know until we get the numbers. But I think that that's going to be their biggest issue, is the numbers. So if we could get aggressive with really trying to get some clean numbers on this and the value engineering, like he was explaining, that could really help a lot. But I'm all for it. And as far as getting the people to know what's going on, they need to come to the meetings too. It's been out there. They haven't shown up. So all you can do is inform them about it. If they don't do it, they don't show up. But thank you, guys. You're doing awesome. And so please just go ahead with the design, and let's just, get these numbers as tight as we can. That's my biggest issue at this point. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brad. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me close this to the public, and let's have some discussion. So let me start by saying this is tough. It's a tough one. Because, as you can see, there's a publicly owned parcel, I guess you can say, in the middle of this parking area. I would say a council, I don't know how many, 20 years plus ago, decided that they wanted redevelopment in downtown, and the only way to help facilitate that was to form a parking assessment district. And that's how we end up with a situation where you've got a publicly owned parcel in the middle of privately owned lots. Let's talk about the challenges. You don't have a perfected easement off of 9th Street. So we could go to the issue of prescriptive rights, and that's probably a legal proceeding. Let's see, is there any public benefits beyond that small blue space? How about this property being immediately adjacent to the South County Transit Hub? How about those sizzling summer concerts everyone likes? Can people say they've gone to these events and not parked in these properties on a weekend? So this policy decision is before this council. The previous council decided that this made sense to try and stimulate investment downtown. And I've gotten calls from a lot more people than anyone who owns these properties. I've had to explain to a lot of folks that the city doesn't own this parking lot, but when they go down there to park and get their mail from the U.S. Post Office, a lot of them don't necessarily want to hear me say, hey, we only own 23% of this, and so good luck. So I think there's a unique opportunity here, and I know that we've tried to be good stewards of the community's monies. And that's why I think when staff has identified two options, and I will say it does bother me when they say, here's the numbers and 23%, and this is the city's share, when in fact there's so much more public benefit to this. So I don't know if it's an assessment district is better, or whether there's an opportunity to pay for this upfront and get reimbursed. These are the kind of tough decisions that we all have to make. So I just want to make sure that we do this not in a silo. We do this with the proper context around this. And I think we've got Brad Ford. I would say there are other, farmers, which is Stacy Corsgotten. Stacy not only owns a business here, she lives in Grover Beach. We've got small businesses next to this post office that I'm not quite sure how they could afford it. I'm kind of at a point of, it'd be great to get 100% participation, but as a bigger picture, we continue to have this ruddy parking lot, and the folks in the community say we're not going to come downtown because of that. So I think we just got to think about what's the bigger picture, and if there's an opportunity, let's figure out what it is. Anyway, Jeff?
I tend to agree. I've been a supporter of this for several years. As well, just a matter of dotting I's, crossing T's, or crossing T's and dotting I's, or whatever the appropriate analogy is there. It's just a matter of the cost. So, and that becomes how do we address the cost implications, because it is a parking lot in the heart of the downtown, and it is right next to Ramona. It is we've been trying to encourage revitalization or redevelopment or some level of participation in our downtown, and yet we have this parking lot that is probably would be more effective if we crunched it up and turned it into base. So, but that's not going to last even 3 years with the amount of traffic that comes through there. So I'm supportive of moving forward with the design. I do support Brad's comment about kind of trying to get a clean number, or as clean of a number as possible. And so I'm anticipating that this would be an RFP that would need to go out. We've participated with a local engineer to get the numbers we have, but this would still need to be a full RFP for design, correct?
Absolutely. This would be one more step in the process of getting the cost estimates. We have the preliminary number, the design would give us the updated honed-in number. And ultimately, the construction bid and getting what the market would bear would be the true cost of what this project would entail. So, yes, we will do a full RFP for this process.
Okay, great. And apologize, I should have asked this question earlier. If we do move forward with either the local funding source, is there, whether it be community development block grant, focused funds, or some other grant funds that could be utilized to pay part or all of the redevelopment or the reconstruction costs of the parking lot?
We could certainly explore the possibility of grant funds to help support this project. The council will be hearing the updated community development block grant application at your next council meeting, so that could be an opportunity to discuss that further. But outside of that, we could look at other grant opportunities to help support the project as well.
And I would add to that, as your representative on the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, I did have a conversation with Rhonda Carley. Two things to say: could we use LTO funds on this? But he also felt that, hey, if there was a larger public benefit, there may be, we may have other access to other resources. So that's a conversation to be had as well.
Did you by chance have the conversation realizing we've got an SB1 item after this item? Could SB1, could we add this to the SB1?
Didn't ask that question.
Okay.
Worth asking.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess for me, I agree with some of what's been said, but I guess I'm still not sure of how it's supposed to work, because it seems like this is almost penalizing the city and just any business owner such as Mr. Ford, who it responds to their mail and shows up to a meeting. Oh, well, now you're in. But if you're not going to show up to a meeting and you're not going to sign the reimbursement agreement, well, you're out, and we're going to try to find grants, and we're going to... I guess, when is this reimbursement agreement going to get signed, and how legally do we hold people to this? Because I think it needs to be signed sooner than later. Because we only have buy-in from half the people. That's not convincing to me that they even want this. That just doesn't seem fair.
To answer your question in the context of legality, yes, if they voluntarily agree with the city that they'll participate in this program, they'll enter into the reimbursement agreements. The agreements will contractually hold them obligated to pay for the period of time necessary to repay back their fair share, whatever that, however that is defined. We haven't talked about collateralization or security of that document. That's another issue to discuss at a future time as to whether we have that or not, but they're defensible documents. Now, you are correct. As far as I know, there isn't a mandate that we can make similar to that of the assessment district structure to force a property owner into signing one.
I guess I don't really want to go forward unless... I know you have 54% at this point, but unless more than, you know, 2 to 3 owners are willing to take this on. I know there is arguably some public benefit of this parking lot, but I think this sets a dangerous precedent. I mean, what about all the other business owners in Grover Beach who do maintain their parking lots? What about, you know, Mrs. Glenn and her dress shop? She's been in business forever, and she's kind of not, she's just unlucky enough to be in that zone that is not set right now for economic development. Well, what about her? You know, she's still pushing and maintaining her parking lot. So I know I never park in this parking lot when I go to things because I assume it's private and I'd be towed. So it's arguable, and I understand if maybe we end up going a little bit over 23%, but I don't want the city and the business owners that are being responsible left holding the bag. I don't think that's fair.
And I think those are great comments. So can you, someone clarify, the 54%, is that inclusive of the 23% public share?
What? So the 54% is the percentage of the building square footage. The building square footage does not assume the city share, because that's part of the parking lot. That was a policy direction that staff received to account for that cost as part of the overall project. But if you look at the building square footage around the parking lot, the city doesn't own any of that property. And so of that building, 54% represents the percent of square footage that is around the parking lot today. And that's comprised of, I believe, 4 property owners that have been actively part of our process. And I will say that if we proceed into the next phase of the process, and based on the council's direction and sentiment, we would enhance our involvement with each property owner. We have talked to most, if not all of them, at some level, but we would enhance that. We would seek individual discussions with each of them to ascertain their level of commitment and bring that back to the council as part of the next phase of this process.
Okay. I would be in support of moving forward, but for me, I would want the next step to be what you're saying, working with each of these owners and getting the reimbursement agreement signed and then going forward. So that would be my preference.
Okay. Barbara, do you have any thoughts?
I think the three-year plan is a waste of time and money and effort. We need to go forward with this and finance it as best we can, getting the most participation that we can out of, hopefully. Is a post office itself considered a property owner, or is that just a lessee?
Yes, the post office essentially is a tenant, and there is a property owner that we have been in contact with. He's down in Southern California. He was unable to make the meeting last week, but we have been in touch with him, and I believe he is open to the improvements and wants to work with us on the cost and timing.
Because I truly do believe those heavy trucks going through there constantly have contributed greatly to the extent of the damage on that section. The rest of it is just poor planning and grading as things were being built and trees were being planted, I think. So, I think we need to go forward with the agreements and with the project and getting the bids started.
Okay. Jeff?
So one more question. Matt, if you could remind me or remind us, we have an active CIP project for this parking lot, correct?
We do.
What is it currently funded at? Do you happen to recall?
I believe it's currently funded at roughly $450,000, which was the original estimate prior to the updated ADA work that we've identified.
Gotcha. Okay. So then from that perspective, if you're ready, I'm going to make a motion that we proceed with design of the full cost or the full parking lot improvements out of the existing CIP project and direct staff to develop reimbursement agreements between the city and the property owners, which would need to be enacted prior to going out to bid on the chosen project.
I would second that.
You mean out to bid for construction?
For construction, correct. Sorry, yes.
Okay, so that's a motion?
Mm-hmm. No, a second.
Is that a second? Okay, any additional discussion? I would also say if you're successful with the reimbursement agreements, that staff work with business owners. And I think you were talking about phasing the project, trying to figure out how to minimize impact to existing businesses if we're moving forward.
Yes. With the unspoken, not in the motion, that city staff does continue searching for alternate funding sources through either grants or other participation scenarios.
Okay. So we're going forward with design. So now if staff comes back and says, hey, we've met with all the property owners and we've only got 90% that have signed on, should they come back, or are we looking for 100%? Is that the intent of your motion?
The intent of the motion would be to then have a subsequent discussion. If they with staff coming back with 90, then we have a decision to make whether there's additional participation by the city. If we have 100% participation, I believe that becomes an easier
okay.
discussion. But if it's 90 or less or so forth, that becomes a subsequent discussion by the council. Yeah, the intent wasn't to require 100% participation before they came back.
I just wanted to make sure that if they didn't, then they would need to come back.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I would do is build that into our next item. So we would show you the design. We would give you the updated cost estimate. We would report out on the extent of property owner reimbursement at whatever percentage that was, and we would leave it to the council to make a policy decision prior to going forward into the next phase of the project, which is the construction bidding.
Okay, and we would be looking for some value engineering.
Yes.
So, okay, there's a motion and there's a second. There's no resolution, so we can do this by voice vote, correct? So all in favor? Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay. So I think we've given staff direction on that item. All right. Let's move back to item number 8. This is a resolution confirming a list of projects funded by SB 1, the Road Repair and Accountability Act. I think Public Works Director Ray, do you have this? You're giving the staff on this item as well?
I am. No need to step up. So thank you, Honorable Mayor and City Council. I'll keep this brief. In April of 2017, the governor signed Senate Bill SB 1. That bill creates the Road Maintenance and Rehabilitation Account, called the RMRA, which is to fund road maintenance and other projects. The city is expected to receive a total of $302,764 over the next two fiscal years, being broken up into roughly $76,000 for the 17-18 fiscal year and roughly $227,000 for the 18-19 fiscal year. To receive this funding, the city must include a list of projects in our adopted budget. Staff's recommendation is to simply append these funds, add them to an existing CIP. That CIP is 2283, which is our major street maintenance program. And the list of projects that council or that staff is recommending to council would be the major streets, including El Camino Real, Oak Park Boulevard, 4th Street, Farrell Road, the Pike, and West Grand Avenue. Now, obviously, $76,000 is not going to construct all of those or much more than a block or so of any one of them. But certainly that is the list from which projects would be selected. Tonight, council has an additional option of prioritizing from that list. And so if council wanted to start work on any one of those streets in particular, we could do that with both this and next fiscal year's funding as a priority. Council should be aware that there are two initiatives being circulated that could end up on the ballot, and those are initiatives to ultimately repeal SB 1. If that happens, staff would return to council to reassess our options. And with that, council has the following alternatives to consider: adopt the resolution amending the 2017-18 budget and funding the above-listed capital project with RMRA revenue. So there's a resolution included as an attachment to your staff report and a budget adjustment document in there. And the other option would be do not adopt the resolution and do not fund the above capital projects. They could be funded using other sources or just simply provide staff with alternate direction. So turn that to council.
Very good. Thank you. Let's see if there's any questions. Miriam, you have any questions?
Just one. Looking at the attachment 2, so this is where you list the cost for the entire street maintenance program of all these roads you just mentioned, right? So as you said, this is not going to come close to covering, but is this money considered what would be 18, the local transportation funds, or what exactly, where exactly does this fall in those funding sources on attachment 2?
So it would be included as an additional funding source. It would be identified as RMRA funding within the CIP and in the city's budget.
Oh, okay. So this is just in addition to these already identified sources.
That is correct.
Sources. Okay. All right. Yeah, that was my only question. Thank you.
Okay. Barbara?
Just the question of whether or not we could add the Ramona Square in as part of that.
So the deadline to submit this list of projects is today.
Oh.
to the CTC. It just happened to coincide with a council meeting. The list has been submitted, and we promised the CTC we would follow up. However, we are aware that the list can be amended at any time. And so if council wished to amend that list, you know, we just need to meet this deadline. Council wishes to amend that list, we could certainly do that and send that forward to the CTC for consideration. So.
I definitely believe that these streets are very desperately in need of some work right now, or the deterioration will be very rapid. So we need to proceed with those.
Okay, Jeff?
My only question is actually just a confirmation question in the fact that for fiscal year 18, we've budgeted $535,000 in this major street maintenance program. By having a reimbursement come through the RMRA line item, for this year, that approximately $76,000 would settle back into general fund reserves, or where would that settle? Or was the RMA funding anticipated when we passed the budget for this item?
So originally the RMRA funding was not considered. This is new money that occurred after the budget process. If the money were not spent, it would simply remain next to the gas tax fund, so for use on roads.
Okay, I understand.
Okay. And that's potentially when you put $75,000-$76,000 this year, and another $227,000 in the next fiscal year. Correct.
That is correct.
So basically, around $300,000 of new money. Okay. Let me open this up to the public. I don't have any speaker request forms. Does anyone ever like to address the item before the council? Seeing no one come forward, let me close it. I'll bring it back. I will say that I think the streets that have been identified, I agree with Councilmember Nichols. I would say that perhaps we should prioritize some of the streets until my general thinking, and maybe I'll throw this out there and see what everyone else thinks is. We did North Oak Park. That was a joint project that we did with the cities of Pismo Beach and Rio Grande. I think that turned out really well. We need to take a look at can we do something on South Oak Park. I know the other night, and I'm going to talk a lot more about a meeting that we had at 16th Street Park, but there was some discussion about trying to find a way to improve, let's say, Oak Park. I would say West Grand. Third would be North 4th. I see there's some a seam when you hit Grand and you go up. I would say El Camino Real looks like it's something. Farrell Road and then the Pike. So that was kind of the maybe just a general thought of prioritizing. I think the other thing as we look beyond this is that even though we know there's a measure out there where looks like there's a group that's trying to recall this, they still have to get over 38. I don't know, how many signatures will this group now need to get?
It depends on the measure, because there is a constitutional measure and then a statutory measure. The constitutional measure requires a higher threshold. I believe it's somewhere in the order of 500,000 signatures. The statutory measure is 300,000 to 400,000. Those are in circulation right now, and we'll know more in early 2018 whether they qualify, one or both qualifies for the ballot next November.
Okay. So I would just say I know that in speaking with Mr. DeCarli, the CEO for the Slocog, he had indicated that move forward in using these monies now, and then we'll find out where we are with that measure. But I think the other thing is this kind of prioritizes for staff as we go forward and using LTF dollars and other dollars that are available to us. So, but I don't know if anyone had any thought or any changes to the list or the order.
No, I would agree with that.
I would agree.
Okay. With not recalling your exact list, hopefully staff can write that down, because I'll make a motion that we adopt the resolution amending the fiscal year 17-18 budget to confirm the incorporation of a list of projects funded by SB 1, the Road Repair and Accountability Act, as prioritized by the mayor's comments.
I'll second.
Greg, did you...
Of course. I'd be happy to read that back to you. That was Oak Park, then West Grand, North 4th, then El Camino, Farrell, and then the Pike.
Okay. Was that a motion?
That was.
Okay, I'm sorry. Is there a second?
Yeah, I seconded.
Okay, there's a motion and there is a second. This is a resolution. We have a resolution here. So roll call, please.
Councilmember Lee?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw?
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson is absent, and Mayor Scholes?
Yes. Motion carries. Okay, we are now going to move to item number... Well, actually, let's take a five-minute break before we get into item number 11. going to reconvene the Gover Beach City Council meeting. This is Monday, October 16, 2017. And we are now going to move to item number 11. This is the statement of facts and findings for determination of commercial medical cannabis dispensary eligibility ranking list and proposed ordinance changes. So, City Manager, I'm not sure who from staff is going to be giving the staff report.
That's me.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. What's before you tonight is to adopt a resolution that would approve a statement of facts and findings for determining the commercial medical cannabis dispensary eligibility list. And on a second item, which is not a formal action, we're asking the council to provide direction to staff on changes to both the land use and regulatory ordinance that we'd bring back to you at a later date. So just for a quick recap, back on September 25th, the council provided preliminary determination for the dispensary pre-applications. This was following a process that involved 12 submitted pre-applications and a staff assessment that was presented to the council on September 7th. Our assessment reviewed the pre-applications by formal evaluation criteria that were established by the council. Those criteria are listed on screen. They're also in your report. The criteria included the dispensary site, the business plan, the qualifications and experience of the principals, the neighborhood compatibility plan, the operations and security plan, and then the local enterprise of the dispensary operation. And the points that were identified by the council are listed as well. So back on the 7th, the council took the list of 12 pre-applications and narrowed down to 7 eligible pre-applications and then directed us to return on the 25th to further review the list and establish a final eligibility list with the top 2 applicants. The council at this meeting reviewed the applicants and heard presentations from each of the firms, reviewing the criteria set by the council earlier, as well as other factors that the council identified as important items to consider. These factors included the distance to sensitive uses in primary areas, the commitment of the dispensary business to the community and how they would support the community, the overall economic impacts, looking at jobs, looking at overall tax revenues to the city, the experience in operating existing dispensaries, be it locally or outside the area, how quickly the dispensary could begin operating, the time frame to actually get up and running to get the business going quickly, and then how the locations were concentrated or not concentrated as a key factor in the council's deliberation, and then lastly, the background reviews as that entered into the thought process. So with that, the council did identify a top 4 pre-applications in rank order. Each council member, as you recall, went through your own individual rankings based on the information that you had obtained and the different factors, the different criteria. Based on that rank order, we went through and did some ratings here at the meeting using a 4-point scale. So if the firm was rated number 1 in your book, then it was assigned 4 points. Your second rated firm had 3 points, and so on and so forth. This was done to determine the top 2 and then the 2 alternates. Based on the ratings that were calculated that evening, we did rate Natural Healing and the Monarch as the top 2 based on what was calculated and reported, with 805 Beach Breaks and Milkman as the 2 alternates. In your staff report, you do see a map that shows the location of the top 2 and the 2 alternate locations. At the very top of the chart, location letter B is the Monarch at the corner of Rockaway and 3rd Street. Moving on down further south, you'll see location C, which is right in the middle. That is Milkman off of Farrell Road. Moving further down, location A off of Huston is Natural Healing Center. And then at the very bottom, location D is 805 Beach Breaks off of Highland. So these are the 4 different locations, again, based on the preliminary ratings that were done at the last meeting. Monarch and Natural Healing were the 2 identified at the top 2. We inadvertently made a calculation error based on the ratings that were done at the last meeting. That was our error as staff. That was done on the spot, and we discovered that and acknowledged it as part of the staff report and acknowledging it here as well. The error gave an extra point to the monarch. So in essence, what was 10 points for natural healing and 9 points for the monarch and 8 points for Milkman 805 Beach Breaks resulted in 10 points for natural healing and then 8 for the monarch Milkman 805 Beach Breaks. So in essence, a three-way tie for those three firms. So that is being shared as part of our process tonight. That being said, we are asking counsel as part of the statement of facts and findings to either affirm the initial determination the council made based on the information that was presented to the council at the last meeting and the individual deliberations that each of you carried out, or make an alternative determination of the top two applicants based on your thought process and your work here this evening. Following the final determination by the council, we are asking the council tonight to take action to adopt a resolution approving a statement of facts and findings. The statement was drafted in the interest of really documenting the process the council followed, the information that was obtained, the different criteria and different factors, and then generalizing the statements the council made about why they landed on the firms that they identified. So it's a general statement that you'll see in the statement of facts and findings that again provides the firm backing behind the council thought process in coming up with the determination. Based on that adoption, the city staff would work with the top four applicants on reviewing the use permit applications as they're submitting them. For each of these top four applicants, they are working on other uses beyond dispensaries, be it manufacturing or cultivation. The dispensary permits at this time would only be reserved to be issued for the top two dispensary applicants. But the other applicants could go forward and be issued permits for manufacturing or other uses. Just the dispensary permits would only be issued for those top two at this time. So that's on the eligibility list. Then just very briefly, I'll touch on some possible ordinance changes that we're bringing to the council tonight. Again, this is a separate action asking for your direction this evening. You did ask us to come back to you with proposed changes to both ordinances, both the land use and regulatory ordinance. We've gone through and identified a number of possible changes for you to consider this evening. The first change is looking at the number of dispensary permits. Based on the comments and input from council members at various meetings, not just the last one, but previous meetings, we are coming back to you this evening with the consideration of increasing the maximum number of dispensary permits issued from 2 to 4. This is still up to 4. So if the council wished to go there, it would still be a discretionary choice to go up to that amount. It just would raise that ceiling from 2 to 4. We are making some recommended changes to the time frames in the regulatory ordinance in the background review process. We have some inconsistencies that we found in the time frames, so we'd like to make that consistent and just more one set time frame. And also, the state law is changing rapidly in this area, and so we'd like to incorporate recent state law changes as part of the governor's trailer bill and budget recently adopted. And so city attorney does have a list of some of those changes that he can speak to in just a moment. We'd like to incorporate those by reference within our ordinances to be consistent with what's happening at a statewide level. So with direction tonight on the ordinance changes, what we would propose to do in order to move quickly in this process is to amend the ordinances working with the Planning Commission on the land use ordinance, because they do need to review the land use ordinance and make a recommendation to council. We've identified Wednesday the 8th for this particular date, and then bring that back to the council for a first reading on November 20th, along with the regulatory ordinance, which does not need to go to the Planning Commission. And based on kind of council feedback on the 20th, we could have these lined up for a second reading and adoption on December 4th. And again, this is pending your direction, pending your feedback, but we're trying to map out a process to move these forward relatively quickly over the next few meetings. And then fiscal impact, you've seen this information before, but we do estimate over time $1 to $2 million annually. We'll update this as businesses start operating and we have more updated revenue impacts. But again, just to keep putting the numbers before us about what we're looking at from a tax revenue standpoint, and then all of the fees generated by businesses will pay for the regulatory costs associated with the businesses as well. And again, the action tonight before you is to adopt resolution approving the statement of facts and findings for determining the eligibility list, and then providing direction to staff on potential changes to the land use and regulatory ordinances. And with that, I'll be glad to take your questions and comments.
Thank you for that staff report. Let me see if there are any questions. Who wants to go first? Jeff?
I think I just have two questions. The second part of the presentation regarding the potential changes to the land use ordinance and the regulatory ordinance, the reason that would need to go back to the Planning Commission is because of the non-number of dispensary questions or changes, because did not the, I mean, if we were to proceed with an up to four discussion of dispensaries, the Commission's already reviewed that, correct? And so any changes to the ordinance would be substantive enough in your eyes to require a Planning Commission?
It's really more of a procedural issue. For the most part, this is a text amendment that we're going back through. It's legislative in nature. As a consequence, as a modification to the code, it's required by our current municipal code to bring it through the Planning Commission. It's not really so much an issue of substantive. We're changing references to the enabling legislation. We're changing references to essentially how many dispensaries we're going to allow ultimately. And my recommendation is I would say follow the code and run it back through the Planning Commission. I know it takes a little bit more time to do that, but essentially that makes it, from a procedural perspective, relatively bulletproof.
Okay. Okay. So from that perspective, the... Secondarily, you didn't mention any need to go back to the Coastal Commission. Would that be a consideration as well if we did proceed with the up to four conversation? Because obviously the map shows that the number of dispensaries of the four that have been identified to date, only one of which is in the is within the Coastal Commission purview. And so we would be okay not proceeding back to the Coastal Commission under that scenario?
We have talked to Coastal staff about this particular change, and they believe that this is a very minor adjustment that would be a consent item, Coastal Commission agenda item, that would be done probably in the January meeting, and I think would be done with minimal effort and work on our end.
Okay. Gotcha. So then last question is, remind me with regards to applications and applicants. So the statements in the or the makeup of an application, can that change from a dispensary standpoint, or how would someone either add someone or remove someone from an application moving forward? Is that permitted under the ordinance?
The ordinance doesn't address that, but for the most part, I believe that if they're in the process of the application and they're changing, that they would have to advise us of that fact. Any principal of an application, to the extent that they've modified or amended them, would have to go through a background check, just like we've done through any of the other principals. That is required under our ordinance. So I would say it's not so much a formal process other than advising us of the fact they've changed their principles. They are part of the application. They're modifying it, and the police chief would have to go back through an interview process with them. But if, in fact, there is a material change in it, then it could affect ultimately your decision on who you approve.
Okay, so that information would be available when we considered the land use and the regulatory components. Is that correct? So, I mean, if someone did come forward and wanted to add someone, that would be under consideration at the time we did
after
the
your initial determination of going forward with your top two candidates, or ultimately if they end up being forward with any code to text amendment changes. Yes, they would have to come back subsequent to even that determination of the council on advices of the fact that they've changed principles. And to the extent they do, they have to go back through a background process related to that. To the extent that principle doesn't pass a background check, they'd either have to eliminate them or potentially we could revoke the permit.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Mary?
I don't have any questions right now, just comments for later.
Okay. Barbara?
Same here.
Okay. I don't have any questions at this time either. So let me open this up to the public. And let's see. Todd Mitchell?
Hi, Todd Mitchell, Grover Beach resident, Manhattan Avenue, and 1071 Highland as well. I just wanted to say, you know, although it's by mistake, I really am supportive that you're considering the possibility of moving from 2 to 4. I've gotten to know many of the applicants, you know, a lot better over time, as I'm sure you have as well. And I think it'll be better for both the industry and the city. What I really wanted to talk more about, though, was those possible changes to align with more recent state law. And I'm sure, as a person who reads this all the time, like it is tough to try to keep up with these changes for sure. And but for myself and the use permits that I'm going for, just want to really make sure that there's hopefully some additional language or clarification for the distributor or state type 11 license, as well as the city considering the retailer or delivery only, where it's not open to the public, as you're allowing them to come in from outside the area. I wouldn't see why you would keep someone such as myself from operating. Because there were 7 of us that were qualified, I think having that as something to keep me vested in the game for any future consideration, and I would hope that you would also consider exhausting the list of 7 before opening the process back up in the future. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Todd, and I think we have your comments in writing here, so thank you for that. Paulette Messenheimer.
Mayor Scholes and all the other council members and everyone over here, thank you for letting me talk. The last meeting when we decided these 4, I did send an email off because I was watching the show afterwards, the night after, to see what actually happened because I was confused. And the confusion started me thinking and writing more things down. And this is what I came up with. And you can tell me if I'm off base. I remember that Matthew Bronson told you guys how you were going to choose. Because there was a little confusion there. They weren't sure how they were going to, who was going to go first, who was going to talk, how they were going to. And so you clarified that for them. And you told them 4 with the proper order in which they were voting for these and why. So what I wrote down was that Mr. Lee, his first choice was 805. Miss Nichols, her first choice was Milkman. And Miss Shaw, her first choice was GDI. And Mayor John Scholes was 805. So in my mind, after I saw that, I called my neighbor, who usually comes here, Sharon. We talk about this a lot. And she said, well, you know, that, okay. And I said, well, if those were the first place choices, 805 got two votes. They're automatically in first place, unless your criteria from these other things pulled them out of it, which I don't know that you all got to discuss that night. Okay, then the second choices was John Lee was Natural Healing, Barbara Nichols was Monarch, Ms. Shaw was Natural Healing, and John was Monarch. So absolutely, Natural Healing and Monarch were tied for second place. That's how I looked at it. It felt so clear to me when I watched it after I emailed. I watched it again, and I said, it looks to me like 805 had two of our council members voting for it. So they weren't even listed as one of the top two. Okay, so that's that. And then just one other thing. I'm concerned about this land use permit, because if it's not clear, we're all going to be very confused. So I don't know if you guys are writing the land use permit out, if it's already been written out. How would somebody who was in this choice be disregarded because of something that's not right? So I think we need to hear about that first, because it's pretty important that the ones that we choose have that criteria met, so that they're not saying, oh, you know, we were chosen, and then all of a sudden, oh, you don't fit the land use permit. So that's all I have to say about that.
Thank you, Paulette.
Okay, and then just real quick, thank the men that did all the hard work at Golden West. They were on their knees. They were digging. I mean, it was so much work in heat, and they were just awesome.
Excellent. Thank you. Amber Baxter, and then I think Amber will be followed by Warren Hamrick.
My name is Amber Baxter. I'm a Central Coast native. And first, I'd just like to thank you, councilmen and members, for... I would personally like to thank you for acknowledging the medical need for cannabis in this community. I'm quite confident that it can be done in a responsible and ethical manner. I've been a nurse for over 18 years, and I've worked with Wendy Cronin of 805 Beach Breaks for over 10 years. And I have witnessed her professionalism and her ethics in caring for her patients. She always puts her patients first, and she is diligent and knowledgeable towards her patients' individual needs, which I think is really important in this industry. And I really don't see that changing anytime soon. So thank you so much.
Thank you for those comments. Warren Hamrick.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council people. Thank you very much for letting me speak tonight. I'm representing 805 Beach Breaks tonight, and I want you to know that we support your adoption of the resolution. We'd like to get this thing through as quickly as possible so that you can start the process of getting these things up and running. And I'll tell you why, is because I think the 805 Beach Break has assembled a winning team. We've got the qualifications and experience, we've got the neighborhood compatibility, we've got the operations and security plan, and we've got the local enterprise. And above that, we've got the resources to make this thing happen. Where we are in the process is we have submitted our application for the use permit for both the dispensary and the manufacturing. We have received our letter of completeness from staff. By the way, staff has been very, very excellent to work with. I have to commend you on your dispense of decision-making process. It's been really refreshing. But we've got our letter back. We have identified the things that need to be changed or dotted or crossed. We have completed that, and I have a meeting tomorrow, actually, with Kathleen Wald, who is the contract planner, as you know, and to make sure that what we have is complete. And so we plan to be submitting that this week. And then after that, we would expect that we would be on the agenda for the Planning Commission sometime in the next month. So just another kudos to you for taking this step as a city, for identifying the staff to best represent you, and let's just get this thing done. Okay?
Thank you, Mr. Hamrick. Those are all the speaker requests forms I had. Come forward.
Hello, my name is Anthony Wayne Embry. I live at 1624 Trueville Avenue. And I'm just curious that the dispensaries that are going in, are they all in the business district? Because Grover Beach is a mesh of business here, resident there. I couldn't really see his map because my eyes are not quite good enough to see that. But I would have a concern with if it is going in any residential areas. I myself have partaken in medical cannabis for years and years and years. I have been to Colorado to see how theirs worked. I have been to Washington to see how theirs worked. I've been to several states. I'm just curious, has any of you been to any of them? Have you visited one? Do you know how they work? Because the traffic is horrendous. People are going in and out constantly. It's going to really disrupt a residential area if you put it in one. And that would be my concern. I don't have any complaints with it, but that would be my concern on their location. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of City Council, Craig Smith. I'm an architect for both the Natural Healing Center and the House of Holistics, a Natural Healing Center dispensary application at 998 Huston. And the House of Holistics location, 821 4th Street. I wasn't going to talk, but as long as Warren got up and hit his points, I thought I better do the same. And speaking on behalf of both these applicants who are on the final list, both have, as you know, stellar statistics and stellar ability, experience, business plan. We've gone over and over all of this in past hearings. I just do want to reiterate that if we are looking at an evaluation, that everything be looked at, everything be considered. To include even the validity of where we stand with the background checks and how complete they are and what they are now currently. And I know Miriam's brought that up in the past, and I would hope you would give that good consideration equally tonight with regards to these two applications. As we all know, Bobby Dayspring, phenomenal experience, has been doing this a very long time. He's here this evening, and he and I have been talking, and we're anxious to move on and get your decision, and hopefully in a positive way. So thank you again.
Thank you for those comments. Anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me close this to the public and bring it back to the council. But first I have to say, Paulette, it's always a pleasure when you come down here. Because I think what you saw up here and what you saw on TV is decision-making in public. So anyone who was at that meeting would know that no pre-decisions had been made because it was not an easy thing to do. So thank you for giving it.
I'm not connected to any of you.
I understand. That's why. I know where you live. You've been coming here for years, and I know that exactly. That's why I just wanted to thank you for that. Okay. So, staff, you are asking the council to affirm the initial determination or make an alternative choice, correct? Was that one of the things you had asked?
Yes, that's correct. So the action that's being asked of the council tonight is to adopt a resolution that would approve a statement of facts and findings, which is a procedural documentation of the work that's been done, the decision-making that's gone in to the process. And ultimately, that statement does recognize the initial determination the council made at the last meeting. So, as part of the action tonight, we are asking the council to affirm the initial determination that was made at the last meeting with the information that you had available and that was presented to you, or to make an alternative determination of those top two, and ultimately take action to adopt the resolution to solidify the statement of facts and findings. And then you can proceed to the next phase, which is the direction on the ordinance changes, which is a separate topic.
Okay. And before we go there, can you just again explain how the ranking went? And thank you all for staff for owning up to the error that was made in the calculation. But I wanted to have you at least explain that for folks here who might be at home. Okay.
Yes. So what's on screen shows the initial ranking, the initial rating that was done. And again, it was based on a 4-point scale with the top firm that each council member indicated receiving 4 points, the second firm receiving 3 points, down to 1 point for the top four. And the quick math we did on the fly produced a rating of 10 for natural healing, 9 for the monarch, and 8 for the milkman, 805 beach breaks. And because of that, the council had a preliminary determination of natural healing and monarch. And then the recalculated rating, which inadvertently added an extra point to the monarch, produced a 3-way tie for second place between the monarch, milkman, 805 beach breaks. Again, based on the rank order the council went through in your individual decision-making share at the last meeting. So natural healing doesn't change. That's still 10 points, but then the other ones do have a 3-way tie for eight points.
Okay, so I was looking for a little bit more. So basically, I know Paula had talked about that. You talked about who when she said each council member said 805. I think Council Member Lee and I had said 805, and Council Member Nichols had identified Milkman and Miriam. So the ranking was based on the number, the placement. You got a certain number of points, correct? So if you were, oh, there you go.
And just providing some further information on the individual ratings, we do show this on screen. So to Ms. Messenheimer's point, just use beach breaks as an example. That was identified as the first ranked firm by two members of the council, Mayor Scholes and Councilmember Lee. So that produced 8 points. Other applicants, I'll just say the Monarch, just as an example, was listed as the second-ranked firm for Councilmember Nichols and Mayor Scholes, and then a third-ranked firm for Councilmember Lee. So that produced 8 points.
Okay.
So again, it was the totality of points. It wasn't based on first-place ratings, but
okay,
the totality of points across the board.
Great, thank you. We'll make sure we get that. Okay. So to the council members, I think the first question becomes affirming the initial determination or making an adjustment.
May I actually, Matt, could you put up the recommendations for this evening? Or the,
yes, sir.
What you're looking for? And so maybe I can potentially request that we take them out of order and potentially have a discussion on the direction on changes to the ordinances and the regulatory ordinances from a standpoint of perhaps a straw poll on the number of dispensaries. So,
well, I don't know. I think we've given direction to staff to modify the ordinance to add the number that says up to 4.
Which is why, and I agree, so staff's coming back for that direction again, or confirming that direction this evening. So if we, in I guess where I'm going in my brain, is if we reconfirm that, then the discussion of ranking becomes becomes more fluid, because then there's a expectation that this council is going to be moving forward with 4 dispensaries. If we're not supportive of going to 4 dispensaries, then we have a much more robust discussion of the 2 versus 4, the top 2 versus the provisional 4. So, which is why I was thinking of having that discussion first, if that's acceptable.
Yeah, I would agree, because that's when you said, should we affirm it, and you looked at me, I don't know if I'd feel right affirming it, because there was a tie. But if I know we're going to 4, then I would feel more comfortable.
Okay.
I don't know. Are we messing it up? I was trying to simplify it.
Let me...
Hey. It's our meeting. I'm just one vote, so I'm not going to sit and argue with you all. So if that's how where we want to go, then City Attorney, you have something?
I was just going to say it is your meeting, and and you can do what you want. But one recommendation is that your direction to staff to go forward is the preparation of these text amendments to bring back both to the Planning Commission and ultimately to you. They're legislative in nature. So ultimately, as you know, they don't become binding until such time as you adopt them. They don't become effective for 30 days, subject to a referendum of the public. So there are no assurances that from tonight onward until such time as that 30 days expires and they become effective, you will have those changes. So as long as whatever you do tonight is subject to that understanding, then yes, you can go ahead and we can discuss that first if you desire and get your direction on that.
And maybe I thank you for the clarification, because I think that becomes a clear point, at least for me, that I'll call it the risk assessment by one or more of the applicants to move forward pending the outcome of that formalization of the document would not be a risk on the city's part, would be a risk on the applicant's part.
I understand. I guess my hesitation and maybe confusion is we have an ordinance that is in effect today that calls out two.
Yes.
So no matter whether we can't make a commitment, but the only commitment we can say is that we want to have staff process an amendment or to the resolution or the ordinances that then specifies that the max number is up to four. So anyway, why it's getting a little awkward for me is that I've got an ordinance that says two, and we've given direction to look at two more. So how do you sync that up? And I don't think you can, per se.
And I guess, and perhaps if we ultimately get to four, so I guess it becomes a matter of sequencing, for lack of a better term, in the fact that until the formalization or the adoption of the ordinance to get up to four, we would only be able to approve or move forward with finalizing two applications. And whether that's a discussion of first come, first serve, depending upon when the applications come in. I haven't asked Matt today if all of the four applications have been submitted, so maybe I'm going down too much of a discussion.
To me, you sound like where you're going is not so much the ordinances, it's really more the ranking or how that's implemented. Because if we're now saying it's not going to be Natural Healing, Monarch, 805, Milkman, but it's going to be definitely Natural Healing, and then of the other three, first one in, first one with a permit, gets that license.
And
that's an alternate discussion.
That becomes correct, which is why I was thinking of having the confirming conversation, for lack of a better term, or the straw poll, to confirm that if we are going to go through the process to get to four, then that's where that discussion on the eligibility comes forward with me. But if we're not going to go to confirm to get to four, then we have that discussion of does Monarch remain in the second location or otherwise.
Okay.
My thinking is that we issued an invitation saying that we were going to have two dispensaries. We need to stick with that. That is what our ordinance is saying right now. And we need to bite the bullet and make a selection of the two based on a number of criteria. I think everybody would be in agreement that Natural won the most points. The other three that are in a tie, that means a discussion for
regulating them in some way, shape, or form to come up with a second one. I don't see that Monarch is automatically it because it was in that place only because of an error. When I was looking at the chart up there before, I saw two companies that all four of us voted for. And it kind of seems to me that that's a consensus right there. So.
Okay. Miriam, do you want to?
I don't even know what to say now. They both make really good points about how to rank them. My thought, I was hoping. My question to clarify, so have we, I know that it would take 30 days to go into effect, but we're all on the same page that we are pursuing for?
Well, I feel like we've given staff that direction.
Okay.
I guess that's why I'm still a little. Yeah, it's still a little awkward to me, but.
I mean, should we all say we agree or disagree with
well,
that?
Well, I think we already gave the consensus at the last meeting.
So we agree. Mm-hmm. Okay.
At the last meeting, you gave direction to staff to go change, do a text amendment to the ordinance to change it so that you could approve up to four.
Up to four.
So that's not a commitment on your part at this point in time that you have to approve three or four.
Okay.
Or one
I
or
see
two.
What you're So we're
so
going up to four, but that doesn't mean right now we have to approve four, but in
exactly.
30 days that would be within our wheelhouse.
It will be within your wheelhouse 30 days after you actually do your final reading.
And adopt it.
So
and
it'll be it. In your wheelhouse in about
so
90
we're
days.
Talking
90 days. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, according to the schedule, it would be January 20th.
January, around January, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then we really do... I was hoping we could kind of avoid this having to go one and two right now, but it sounds like we really need to figure that out.
Well, I think we had before said no matter who's one or two, the others are still in the mix because
right.
we still have to go through a use permit process,
right.
and there's still other things that could fall. Someone could fall out,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we didn't want to then have to come back and start over again. So I guess it's just a matter at this point, at least in my mind, of thinking that we've got four. We know who's won in the other three. That's four total. So we are moving in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This. So because I'm just going to say it. I'm going to break. If I have to look at all of these and I say everybody was eligible, everyone was qualified, and the one thing that really drove home this to me is first let me clarify for Wayne. So none of these are in residential areas. Just for let you know. But we heard from business owners and community members who said. Don't concentrate these in the industrial area. So, for me, I didn't look at Monarch and say, okay, if I'm trying to have some distance between the first ones that go in, to me that carries a little more weight. However, I'm only like I said, I'm only one vote. I think we're heading down the road. I think what we've said is let's get two up and running. Let's find out. Let's make sure because we said these are legal businesses. That these are not the sinister things that some people try to characterize them as, and I know someone talked about traffic. I mean, you get traffic with restaurants and other uses too. So I don't think we're shutting the door to anyone that is in the top four. As a matter of fact, I think where is he? Oh, there's Todd. And I think we agreed with Todd last time that we would exhaust the list of seven before starting over again. So I'm just trying to figure out how do we. Simplify and make this process a little clearer. I don't know.
Would it be illegal, because I know, we need to support our decisions with legal findings or with our findings. I mean, one thing that both of the things that they said as far as, make sense to me as far as picking a number two, but the way I'm seeing it, a reason I would have for just pursuing Natural Healing Center and then Monarch is because it was our error. But as such, they've acted upon that, and they have, I'm sure, taken the steps to move forward as if they were one and two, and even for that reason alone, I would like to leave them one and two. Would that be an okay justification?
You're totally entitled to do that. You have, within the findings of facts,
I laid out specifically the basis, evidentiary basis, upon which you decided to make the decisions that you did based on a numerical scoring. You have a three-way tie. So functionally, your consideration of the criteria that was used as a basis to do exactly what you suggested of picking Monarch as number two is totally defensible.
Okay. Well, then I think that would be my preference at this time. In my mind, making it simpler. I'm not sure if it makes it more complicated because it's what half the council did not say. But I also think it's important what people are bringing up with the land use procedure, because what I say about the Monarch is it may be the best, most popular placement or the least popular placement. I'm really not sure in my mind. So they may have some hurdles or ups and downs during that land use process too. So I don't know. I think it's important that they keep proceeding and then we have backups.
All right.
That, if I can interject, that is a reasonable observation. The fact that you make a determination tonight is not a guarantee that any of these applicants will ultimately be operational in a cannabis business in this city. What it means is they've gone through the first part of this process. Then they will be submitting their applications for a conditional use permit. That's a discretionary entitlement, and they have to meet the conditions of our code to get that entitlement issued. I don't know that much about each of their facilities to say that it's a slam dunk they'll get it. Most of them will. Some of them may not. If they don't, they won't be operational under our code. And then you would have the opportunity to drop down to the next applicant. So it is a condition precedent after you make this determination tonight for them to get that CUP before they can be operational.
Okay.
So I'll go back to just for discussion purposes. So one of the criteria that I used was ability to open a facility. So, and that the conversation that we had at the last meeting, I was pretty clear as that was why 805 Beach Breaks was my first choice, because they in their application were consistent in their opportunity and their ability to be open in a very short time frame. The placing them in the third or the fourth position put them into a conversation of the city stalling them from opening. So in perspective with regards to Natural Healing and Monarch, because they would now not have even an opportunity for a Planning Commission meeting until after June 20th. And so, again, I haven't asked the city manager, maybe I should, what is the process, or who of the four, of the top four on the list are closest to getting to a Planning Commission?
Based on what's been submitted thus far, and what's been resubmitted, it appears that Natural Healing Center is probably the closest. They did submit their resubmittal last week, responding to our comments. We're reviewing those now, and we are identifying November as a possible date for a Planning Commission review. We haven't totally confirmed that, but that's the goal we're working towards, which would then place it on a council agenda for review and issuance in December. But that's the first pathway we have at this point. We have not received the other resubmittals yet, and as we do, we'll be routing them through the review and getting them ready for Planning Commission as quickly as we can.
So here's a question. So of all these applications, is there anyone that's just filed for just a dispensary, or are they all combo?
I'll have to defer to Mr. Buckingham to answer that question.
Good evening, Bruce Buckingham, Community Development Director. Of the top four,
all do have some other component other than dispensary.
Will that other component require a use permit?
Yes. It will be processed simultaneously for the dispensary. And
so someone could go through the use permit process, and then if they are successful 2 months after, they could then come back and modify to get a use permit for the dispensary component, correct?
Well, right now they are processing both the dispensary and manufacturing simultaneously.
So I guess maybe the question for us is that there are the four that have been identified, if they are willing to take to continue moving forward in that process, because I thought we had this conversation at the last meeting, that maybe then we give staff some direction to allow them to move forward in the use permit for dispensary as well, with the understanding that if they don't get a license, they don't, you know, they don't get to proceed. Because they still got to get a state license eventually.
If your question is, can they move forward with a conditional use permit for a dispensary? Yes. Anybody could, theoretically, because it's a land use entitlement. Now, under our code, they can't proceed to go forward with any cannabis activities, notwithstanding they may be issued a permit without that cannabis permit being in place. So the issue primarily is whether you want them to move forward with processing a cannabis permit without the conditional use permit being in place and not being awarded. In other words, the top two, pursuant to our current code, could proceed forward with an application for a cannabis permit because you've designated them as the top two. But as the two alternatives, my recommendation would be to wait until such time as they have the opportunity to proceed forward. They can certainly go forward. They can pay the costs and expenses for the processing fees. But obviously, if you haven't designated them as one of the two that are entitled under our ordinance, we cannot issue them a permit, notwithstanding they pay the fees, processing fees to get there. That's why, from my perspective, I would suggest that it's probably prudent that they wait until such time as they actually get authorization from you to proceed forward.
But I'm sure they have their own legal counsel who would give them advice, correct?
Sure.
Thank you.
So, one last question. Have all four formally submitted complete applications for dispensary?
Mr. Buckingham, could you address that question?
Three of the four have submitted. The Monarch informed us that they would be submitting next Monday.
Okay. Okay. So under the, all right, let's, under the regular, under the ordinances, staff, you've listed several things you'd like cleaned up with the land use ordinance, correct?
Yeah, basically, upon a thorough review of the Medicinal Adult Use Cannabis Regulation Safety Act, the governor's trailer bill, there are very, very few changes that we need to make. For the most part, the Medical Cannabis Regulation Safety Act was repealed by that legislation. So therefore, some of the references that we made to the Business Professions Code 19,300 section, no longer valid statutes. So for the most part, the enabling legislation in both ordinances would need to be changed. And then the reference, as we've already discussed, of moving section, moving the number of allowed dispensaries from two to up to four, under 4.10.045, we would make that recommendation per your direction to us. The regulatory ordinance, same thing, modification of the references to the statutes of the previous legislation that's been repealed. good cause, we had talked previously about taking some of the definitions in 4000.20 and including them in the definition of good cause, such as moral turpitude. making the reference to prior litigation, prior convictions to be consistent of 10 years. Certainly can take direction from counsel to the extent that you want to change that. And again, adding in section 4000.168, subsection 8, which includes moral turpitude as basis for good cause. Other than that, there really isn't any additional changes that need to be made in our ordinance to make it consistent with the new state laws.
Okay, so you gave us a listing of those items.
I did.
This was not part of the staff report, correct?
No, other than the staff report reference that I was going to hand that out to you this evening.
Do you have any extra copies for folks who might be interested in?
We certainly can make them, yes.
That would be fantastic. Okay, for the council, we've got land use ordinance. It looks like there are four changes that staff is recommending. I was trying to see if some of the things outlined by Mr. Mitchell dealt with. Was it land use or regulatory? I think it's looks like it's more regulatory.
Yeah, I had a question about what he raised about local delivery. When we first,
Hang on a second. City Attorney, have you seen this document?
Yes, there was a copy of this on my chair this evening.
Okay. Can you tell me if A, B, or C relates to land use ordinance, regulatory ordinance, or would those be captured?
Manufacturing type 2 with volatile solvents is defined with our regulatory ordinances.
Okay.
We do allow it with the exception of one volatile solvent.
Okay.
Distributor type 11, distribution of cannabis and cannabis products. I'm not sure whether this is a question or statement. I mean, we can go back. It would be contained within our regulatory ordinance. As far as I know, we haven't limited any of the licensing. When I go back and amend this, basically the section that defines the allowable uses under state law would be allowed under our ordinance. Retailer delivery only, I assume that's the one without storefronts. I'll go back and I'll double check that again, but I don't think that we have eliminated that as a use either.
Okay.
So then basically those are things that we want you to take a look at as part of the regulatory ordinance, correct?
I certainly will, and I assume that the direction of the council is that you want to make sure that they are included as uses. And if so, if they're not and they need to be amended, I will include that in the amendment I bring back to you.
Okay. There was one other thing that was raised to me earlier this week, and if it's going to hold up the process, then maybe we just address it later. But our cultivation tax at $25 per square foot, when we first started, seemed pretty par for the course. But as things have evolved, $25 per square feet on the first 5,000 may be higher than most people are doing. And you know, the reason I'm bringing this up is that we have such small square footage, and people have expressed, well, I want to build a warehouse, and that's something we really want to get, built infrastructure. But people may not necessarily want to go to all the trouble to build a warehouse and cultivate if the taxation is too high. So that's... I don't know if that's just something to look at. You know, are we still measuring up versus other people in the state, and we can look at that at a later date, maybe.
No, I would think we'd have to. We're not, that's not an item before us tonight.
Right.
And that's a totally different ordinance, and that was a vote of the people. But I think if after we get done with this, we can give staff that direction, we can do that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's do this. Is there a consensus to have? Well, let me go back to the land use ordinance. So the four items are the things that staff has identified that need to be cleaned up. And so maybe someone should just, I don't want to take a straw poll. Someone just make a motion to clean up the land use ordinance and give staff this direction, and let's see if there's a second.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion, there's a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, let's move to the regulatory ordinance. There are eight that are listed here. In addition, I think there were three that certainly I think are intended to make sure that we are in compliance with state law, because I think we know that anyone who gets a license or permit here has to get one from the state. So everybody's okay with having staff look at items A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now I do have one thing that I did want to bring up. There was some new information that has come to light tonight regarding an individual who was not listed as a dispensary principal, but as an advisor or consultant. I can't give a lot of details, and so I'm just wondering if, and clearly we haven't had a chance to look into this information. I'm just thinking that we may need to revisit item number 7, and I don't know how we do that.
Council, we had significant discussions in closed session related to criminal background information. Currently, the ordinance, at least the intent here, was to go back and amend that to allow you the ability to reference convictions for felonies back a period of 10 years. There's nothing in concrete that requires that other than what you define within your ordinance. So, theoretically speaking, you can eliminate that completely in the context of the number of years. If you desire, you could go back further than 10 years if you desire and make it 15 or 20. That would be up to you. Obviously, we can't discuss what we discussed in closed session in open session, but you understand the nature of some of the discussions that we had and whether it's a benefit to you or not to give us direction to go back and either eliminate the years or make them make it longer in terms of going back further in terms of 10 or 15 or 15 or 20 years. That's certainly your discretion to give us that direction.
Okay. And I'd say that information came to me this evening. I just did not want to just acknowledge that and bring that up. So, but I can't give a whole lot more details. I think this is more background, and we can't have the full discussion here. We have to consult with legal counsel and have that discussion. But I would say the rest of these items, are part of the ordinance, and it would be good to clean up, make sure we're compliant with state law.
I'll make a motion that we move forward with the regulatory changes, including the items A, B, and C in the letter from Mr. Todd Mitchell, as well as the caveat to make the regulatory ordinance in conformance with state law to the extent it's known at this time.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion, there's a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay. Eligibility list.
And we're back.
I'll start.
Okay. Well, or how about someone make a motion?
Well, I was going to start by saying, and maybe it is a necessary motion, is that, or maybe it's just a confirming comment, is that we have an eligibility list of 7 applicants, and consistent with our previous discussion, however the next discussion goes, all 7 of those should be exhausted before establishing a new list. So I don't know if that's a motion that is needed or just confirming prior discussion.
Okay.
Well, I'll make a motion that as far as the the ranking, that dispensary eligibility ranking list for now, we leave our 1 and 2 as Natural Healing Center and the Monarch, with the understanding that 805 Beach Breaks and Milkman are 3 and 4.
Okay, there's a motion. Is there a second? I'll second that. Discussion? No discussion?
So actually, my discussion just goes back to the propensity or the opportunity for opening, so which is why realizing that Monarch has not formally submitted their application, it'll still be within the 60-day requirement by the ordinance. But the likelihood is that they would be behind the other 3 which is why I was going to bring all three into conformance and make an opportunity for the process of the applicants to come forward to us. If, let's say, Natural Healing obviously is the first one moving forward, it's been represented that they may get to a planning commission as early as November. Let's say Milkman is second to get to a planning commission. So then, let's say 805 Beach Breaks is third. They would be potentially approved subject to confirmation of the ordinance. And then Monarch, if they get their second or if they get their fourth, that would be subject to the applicants. And so that's where I guess my discussion was going.
Okay.
So, but
great.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason I went with the original motion is because we already, you know, stated publicly it was going to be Natural Healing Center and Monarch, and we didn't put this kind of race to the office stipulation on it. So Monarch thought that they had time, and it's not like they're not working on it. So I'm just not sure if changing the rules in the middle is a good idea, and changing the names in the middle is a good idea for the fact of definitely maybe saving a month or two for a certain business, but I don't know if it reflects poorly on our process. I mean, we're doing our best. I don't know.
I don't understand the issue of who can open the fastest. Nobody's going to be permitted to open until they get their state license,
no.
And that's not going to be until...
No,
okay.
No.
So we're going to call the question. Donna, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw?
Yes.
Mayor Scholes?
Yes.
Councilmember Lee?
No.
Councilmember Nichols?
No.
And Councilmember Peterson is absent.
Then I'll go ahead and make a motion that we adopt a resolution approving the statement of facts and findings for determining commercial cannabis, medical cannabis dispensary eligibility ranking list with Natural Healing Center as the top slot and a joint second for the three remaining dispensary applications.
Second.
Okay, so what does that mean?
It goes back to my conversation of...
You're saying first through gets a license?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Roll call.
Councilmember Lee?
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson is absent. Mayor Pro Tem Shaw?
Yes.
And Mayor Scholes?
No. Okay. Is that it?
Yes, that's it.
Okay. All right. So we're going to move on. Council committee reports.
I don't have a committee report, but I wanted to let y'all know I got the SloCal annual report, if anyone wants to see it. And we are going to have a meeting in December to kind of go over the results. But in a nutshell, tourism is up. Dollars are up. It looks like more hotels were vacant, but that was only because there's so many more rooms now than there were last year. So.
Okay. Barbara?
The only committee report I have is the sanitation district meeting, at which it was voted to censure Councilmember Hill.
Okay. Jeff, you have anything?
I have no committee reports.
Okay. The only thing I have was a slow cog, and I'll make you guys copies. So the things that we covered at Slow Cog that certainly are of interest to us was the 2019 Regional Transportation Plan. We had talked about challenges and financial assumptions, and as you can imagine, we've got more projects than revenues and resources. The three big projects that we continue to discuss and try and figure out what are the priorities are the U.S. 101, that's the what they call the Shell Beach Straits, that's from Avila Beach drive-off ramp to Spyglass. Then there's State Route 46 and State Route 227. So the good news is that staff has identified funding to help along with the design and the environmental piece to figure out how we can relieve traffic on 101 along that segment. As many of you probably know, when you drive that segment of 101 on the southbound lanes, anywhere from 4:30 to 5:30, it gets pretty very congested, and so they're looking for ways to add an additional aux lane and relieve that congestion. Where it starts to get tough is that as South County delegates, we continue to fight for money to bring into the South County. We have our North County counterparts who are insisting that 46 West is just as important when we've spent tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars on 46 East. So that's something we want to make sure we keep our eyes on, figuring out how we can make that a priority. I do know that Caltrans is having a workshop to talk about a 101 corridor and to present that information to the community and the public. With respect to the regional transportation plan, Grover Beach has been very successful in the past because we really don't have a state highway running through our city, although Highway 1, we've been able to get other dollars from a maintenance standpoint. As you all recall, we got about $2 million for North Oak Park. But the more the state comes back and says we need to put more money and maintain state roadways, it makes it harder for us to compete for those dollars. So we'll continue to keep fighting, and hopefully we can bring some money home. I did have a Coast Rail Coordinating Council meeting. This is one of the groups that's been trying to figure out how do we get intercity rail that would literally run from San Diego into San Francisco, because right now there is no intercity rail service other than Caltrain that goes into San Francisco. So I know they were looking at going from San Jose and then taking Caltrain from there. I think we recently had a situation in which in the rail plan there's been a discussion now with respect to changing the start time for that rail service earlier in Southern California, which could affect not only this new service but the existing Pacific Surf Liner. So more to follow on that. I'll let you know if that changes the schedule, if there's going to be more or fewer trains and more buses coming into Grover Beach. I think that's what I'm trying to ascertain and give you all a complete report out on that. Jeff, you have anything?
Under committee points, no. So I had some council communications when you're okay. Ready for that.
So let me do this individual. I know Wayne's been here very, very patiently. My communication is on... What day was that? The 11th. On the 11th, Mr. Embry actually had come in and chatted with me, expressed some concerns from himself and the neighborhood, and those concerns dealt with traffic and speed on 16th Street. When that street was opened up, there was not a lot of discussion with the residents. So looking at if there are opportunities for traffic calming, whether it's a speed cushion, a speed bump, or whatever other measures. There was also a discussion regarding pedestrian safety. Apparently there are some children that are either coming from south of Faro crossing and then over near Mentone. Stop signs, wanted to look at that, what the process is. And I know that was a huge interest, and I had understood at a previous council a few years back there was a large group that came to present information. So what I had said is I would bring it back to this council to let you know this information had been given to me, and that to get consensus to start take a look at are there methods that we can slow traffic down on 16th Street, improve pedestrian safety, and some of the other items. They also had brought up the issue of criminal activity in the park, drugs, and maybe transient issues. And so I know that Commander Miller, the city manager, was there, and I think one other patrol officer, I forget his name, was with us. And so they did talk about patrolling and different measures that we can do to improve community safety. There was also a question regarding the effectiveness of cameras, since there are cameras on Grand and at the parks, and then street lights, the issue of lighting. So those are some things I'd be looking for the council consensus to have those discussions to see if there are opportunities to improve this park, to improve that neighborhood. Obviously, we're going to have to look at that with respect to resources and things of that nature. Mentone Park and Basin. I know that several years ago when there was a recession, and Wayne talked to this a lot better than me, it talked about there was a conscious effort that the city council at that time and the city manager at that time, that was, I think Mr. Peralt was city manager, had stopped doing maintenance on that city park, that basin. And I know that we now have some interest from a group that wants to do soccer, but I think the community said, hey, can we look at other activities in there? Because if we can find a way to get back to where we had, used to have softball games and things of that nature, maybe that gives more lighting and more community safety in that basin. And then there was a question regarding water rates and penalties. And there was one young lady who was very adamant about this, and I really appreciate it, because she had indicated that she's moved several times. And so when we figured out, when we tried to establish what was the baseline, that may not necessarily apply to someone who moves into that house. And so I know that Matt and I committed to taking a look, because I know she had indicated there was nothing in the water bill that would indicate if you were going to get a penalty, to call the city and try and work through that process. So I know we committed to try and take a look and see what was sent out, and if it was, we need to find a way to improve that communication. Street repairs. Someone brought up street repairs and V. Lopez, and I have to say, you know, when I drive right out of the 8th Street, they came in and they replaced the water line and others, but then the street now is pretty bumpity, and, you know, someone had talked about El Camino Real. So those were many things. It was a group that Wayne went about, when Mr. Emery went out and he talked and knocked on neighbors' doors. There was about 70 individuals that attended, and everyone had a lot to share, and I'm glad we were able to go there. He actually brought water for everyone. So, Wayne, you waited this long. You want to come up and, well,
just... Actually, yes, and I would like to thank all of you for showing up, Matt, you, the watch commander. I don't remember his name, but I would like to thank
Commander
him
Miller.
Also.
Yeah,
they all did a great job. They talked about some neighborhood watch and such as this. And I believe that there's a nice lady out there that would be a great neighborhood watch captain. Not me. I have my agenda, and my agenda is what I presented to you.
Yeah.
I also heard today that they did move the bus stop.
Oh, okay.
I don't know for sure, but I heard that they moved the bus stop. There was kids there this morning, but so maybe some of them did get picked up. I don't know.
Okay. That's right. Thank you. And I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, and so they've done a great job there. I was really impressed with your meeting tonight with your... And, Miriam, I'm impressed with you and some of the things that you've said. John, I've always been impressed with you. Jeff, I've just met you tonight. And I'm not sure, but I think you're the lady that was sitting at my house when I won that award. Did I give you a cactus, or was that not you?
Where's my cactus? Anyway, thank you.
But no, it was a good meeting, and I think that a lot of people did have some good things
they
to
really
say.
Did.
Now, the lady that was going on about the water, as I said before, I know that the city asked for a voluntary reduction. I don't remember the amount of what it was. But they sent out flyers asking everybody for a voluntary reduction. Personally, I know that I cut mine way down, because I used to keep my... The lady was saying, my neighbor has a less green grass with a water feature. Well, I'm the neighbor that has a less green grass with a water feature, so I was kind of hated getting thrown under the bus, but she did. However, a lot of people like her, she doesn't water her lawn anymore. She showers every other day. She can't cut her water usage down any farther. It's not a possibility. One of the ladies that lived down the street from me was 80-something years old. She let her front lawn, rear lawn die. She showered, I don't know how often, but she even buys drinking water from Culligan, and I do that too. A lot of people do, because we all know our water is not the best here in Grover Beach. So I don't know, the fines that people are getting, somebody needs to look into that, because it's I think that they're targeting low-income families at this point. I think that's what it's doing. I mean, they've got more kids, they've got this, they've got a lot of different things, and I really believe that that might be a problem for a lot of people like that. As I said, you asked for a voluntary reduction, a lot of people did it, then you asked for a mandatory reduction, and I don't know the percentage, so...
Okay. We'll look that up.
Mayor Schultz can look that up, but I know that I have complied with it except for 1 month or 2 months. I was out of town for 2 or 3 months. The next year, they wanted to know why my bill was up higher than it was the year previous, because I wasn't there for 10 weeks. No one was home. So I do shut all of my systems down in the wintertime. I've done golf course management and maintenance. I know when grass needs water, I know how to cut it back seasonally. Winter, you can use less, and sometimes completely off. So I haven't had a problem, but a lot of people do have the problem with this. And it's citywide, that water situation. Everything else you guys have addressed, and I don't have a problem with. But I think that that's something that should be looked into.
Great. Thank you, Wayne. And it's anyone else. So the only other thing that I did miss was some folks brought up the issue of Oak Park, South Oak Park, where it basically transitions from two lanes in front of Vaughn's and then down to one. And so we had indicated that we will be redoing Long Branch. And I know that the neighbors there had asked for diagonal parking. I'm pretty sure we had said hold off on that because there's an opportunity to chat with the neighbors to see if there is a chance to address that issue, because that would be a benefit to everyone to figure out how to have two lanes and not have that terrible transition, but then also make up for that parking, because no one's crazy about losing parking, so we know that'll be a tough discussion, but that was brought up and we are going to be addressing that.
Can I mention one other thing? It'll just take a minute. You did a great job on Oak Park there coming in to Grand Street. But then when you get to the intersection, it's really, really difficult. Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be a problem. I'm sure all of you know what I'm talking about there. If you don't know who has lane control at that point because of the way the lanes line up. And people in the right-hand lane think they can go in straight in. People in the left-hand
Over. Okay.
Really, really complicated
here. Great, thanks. Thanks for that. Okay. Jeff, what did you have from communication?
So actually, just a quick question for you with regards to, I know on Oak Park we had talked about having that discussion about adding some additional lanes, and then the intersection of Grand and Oak Park, we had kind of left that as a subsequent phase to whether to raise that up and to do some additional improvements there. And then on South 16th, and I've driven through there, but I haven't specifically looked. We did have a traffic committee recommendation to move the parking to the other side to help with site distance. Has that been accomplished?
Which one?
At 16th and Farrell.
So, the recommendation, I think we approved it, was to actually move the... restripe it and move the center line further south, which allows you to bring the stop bar closer. Greg, you?
Yeah.
Well, let's let him earn his money. He's here.
I'd be happy to answer that. So we're in the process of making that happen. We will be coming back to council. Matt may not even be aware of this yet, but I believe we'll have a discussion with the city attorney and to be sure, but I think we need to come back to council with it. It'll be a very simple design, but an actual sign stamp design for council to bless before we do the work. It's a very small iteration that we didn't anticipate having to do. But with that being done, I suspect we can have this done pretty quickly. And our capital projects manager is working on that as we speak. So.
Okay. Because I know that was one of the mm-hmm. sounds like one of the discussion items was safety around that intersection. So, but going back to council communications, just had one tonight, and it's basically a congratulatory shout out to actually three members of our three residents of Grover Beach who have gone through and successfully graduated from the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce Leadership Program, class number 26. It's a countywide program, of which I was a graduate of class 5. Way too long ago. So this year, but three residents of Grover graduated class 26, and those are Clint Weirich, Jared Jordan, and Jessica Mattson. So just wanted to say, I was, and their graduation was Friday night, and it was a good function.
Good.
Very
cool.
Yep.
If we could just go back to what you said from the meeting, because I think at one point you asked if we'd be interested in agendizing some of what you talked about. Mm-hmm. I know I definitely would, because as far as the traffic calming on 16th, I think we should definitely build that into our next traffic calming discussion. I actually did want to bring up 16th Street Park and Mentone Basin Park when we look at our next year's goals, because both of those sports fields, they're there, but they're really rutted up to the point where people don't even use them anymore.
Right.
Ekbom Field is still used, but even that is not very even. Mentone's not used, and the one in the far corner is not used. So the sports fields are explodingly overcrowded, and here we have these fields, and they just really need some love and maintenance. So I would be in favor of really taking a hard look at that, no matter how we do it. And also lighting and the cameras in the park, if the police think that would be helpful. I mean, if we're going to do it in North Grover at Ramona, we should do it over at 16th Street Park. We spend a lot of time there, and we've seen some drunk drivers go through there and some people who just, like, went right through a house during the middle of the day and during a softball game. And we didn't know what to do. We just had to huddle the kids up. So it needs attention, and it's a highly used area by all of us. So, and I would also agree with a future discussion on, I know we visited the water penalties and we reduced them, but since then Arroyo Grande's come out and said everything's great to take everything away, and we're still doing penalties. I would like to maybe see how we're doing this winter and maybe talk again, because darn it, I am sick of having a brown lawn.
So that we've already given that direction.
Okay.
That's kind of, we cut down the penalties from the amount. I think we were trying to be responsible and says, let's see what the next rainy season brings, and then we'll revisit.
Yeah, it needs to, because it's tough.
Okay. Bob, do you have anything?
Nothing.
City manager?
Just speaking very briefly on the topic of park improvements and park events, just want to highlight that last Saturday we had our first ever Movie in the Park event at Ramona Garden Park. We drew 100 people to an evening under the stars and had just a wonderful evening to show a great animated movie and help build community and activate our park. So thank you to Kathy Petker and her team for a great job in putting on this first ever event, and we look forward to future events going forward. Also, speaking of parks, as the speaker mentioned earlier tonight, Golden West Park is going along very well. In fact, we're almost done. We've got a few more punch list items to work out, and then we can get forward to plan the ribbon cutting for mid-November. So stay tuned on that. But if you haven't seen it, take a sneak peek. It looks very nice and a very big step forward. Thanks to the council for your guidance in making that happen. And then just to maybe add my last 1 cent on the water penalty discussion, certainly we want to work with each individual household, with each account holder, to try to work and find ways to conserve water, to find leaks that have emerged, to change the household number, to adjust the targets. We really want to work individually with people as much as we can. We do give a courtesy notice, a warning notice, and then eventually, if the behavior hasn't changed or the data hasn't changed, then we'll go to the penalty. But that's the last resort. We really work very closely with people to get to get that point. And then just to allay any concerns or perceptions, we work with everybody across the community equally. There was a comment about perhaps certain segments of the community. We work with anybody from every walk of life and every account holder to try to achieve the water conservation goals we're trying to achieve.
So, Matt, do we know that if someone moves out of a house, someone moves in with a new customer, do we reset the baseline? How do we address that issue?
It does not happen automatically because of the pace of movements is such that we don't always know who's coming in, who's coming out, particularly when it comes to rental properties. We do want property owners to contact us, and we ask renters to contact us to let us know. But there is movement that takes place without the city's knowledge.
So now if someone moved in and they were paying the utilities, that they would come down and get their...
If they are paying utilities. But in some cases, property owners maintain the utility payment themselves even when they have renters come and go.
Okay, because that was the gist of the young lady's comments.
And we'd be glad to work with her individually to try to address
her
issues.
I think I had sent you some questions, so the answers to those would be sufficient for now. Thanks.
And then
else?
My last point deals with a topic regarding the countywide animal shelter, and this might be a topic that Councilmember Lee may want to recuse himself on, given his involvement on the project.
Yeah. So he's the city manager is about to talk about the animal shelter, and that is a project I'm working on at the county, so I will meet you in closed session.
Okay.
Oh, we still have closed session.
All right. Thank you. And this is a time-sensitive topic that I'm bringing to you tonight, hence the nature of this. We've been working very diligently on the countywide animal shelter. This is an agreement the council approved back in February. We have an October 31st deadline for cities to have the first chance to withdraw from this contract. And at this point, we and the other cities are proceeding along. The city of Paso Robles and the city of Tascadero are considering an alternative arrangement for animal shelter and animal services. They've scheduled a special meeting for October 30th for each city to consider their options. I come to you just indicating that if they were to pull out of this arrangement, that would take away one-third of the shelter usage, and we may have to consider our options like other cities in the county. I would ask for your awareness and to put on the radar that we may be seeking either to schedule a closed session or some kind of discussion item on October 31st to meet that deadline, or to have me be able to work with the mayor directly to see what happens coming out of this special meeting on October 30th in Paso and Atascadero, and to see what the impact would be on us. It would raise our costs by roughly $300,000 over the 25-year lifespan of the financing, so it's not insignificant. Other cities in the county are also having similar conversations. So I wanted to put this on your radar. There is a timing element to this, and again, we may be seeking a discussion with the council to meet our deadlines with the county on this countywide project. And also, we'll be talking to our county partners about encouraging our involvement to continue this regional project going forward.
So are you looking for direction from us that if you and the mayor can just work on this, or just an FYI?
It's an FYI primarily, but to let you know that if a decision is made on the 30th by two of our North County cities, there is a financial bearing on the other cities that would remain that we'd have to...
Okay. So I would say, depending on the decision they make, you'll need to come back to us. This had come up at the mayor's meetings, and so I just said, thanks for sharing the information. We've already discussed this, and apparently the two cities have decided to take it a step further. So, interesting. So it'll be very interesting to see what comes out of their special meeting.
The only comment I would have is, if they're going to decide something on October 30th, I don't think we should be under some time pressure to sign something on October 31st that suddenly signs us on to $300,000 more. I mean, they need to let us slow down then as well.
And that's a valid point, and yeah. I think there could be some consideration given for what other cities would have to do. And
yeah.
and be able to give us a little bit of pause so we can come back to the council at our next meeting to
yes.
be able
yeah.
to formally
we,
consider
we will, we will. We will take a pause.
Yeah,
so
that's only fair.
They're not telling us what to do.
Yeah.
So, anyway, thank you. Mm-hmm. City Attorney, any report or comments? Okay, so at this point, we are going into closed session. It is the intention of the City Council to meet in closed session concerning the following item: Conference of Real Property Negotiations pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8. Property is Assessor's Parcel Number 060-381-010-011. Agency Negotiator, City Manager, City Attorney. Negotiating party is Pacific Companies under discussion or under negotiation the discussion of pricing conditions of payment. With that, we will recess into closed session.